everyone. Welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is episode 17. Sorry for the slight accidental hiatus that we have had you on for the last month and a half or so. We got a bit behind, partially due to my internet being out for over 3 weeks, which was not an ideal circumstance, obviously. But we are back in the game and have a bunch of different episodes planned for you over the course of July, heading into August. I can literally count at least 5 episodes that will be recorded in the next month, in some capacity, if everything goes to plan. Good, regular, nice flow coming through of what I hope is quality pop culture content. So if you are not familiar with Not About the Weather, we are a general pop culture podcast, group of people who talk about things that we like and don't like, and that's pretty much it. So you could get anything. If you're listening, you probably know why you're here. I am one of your hosts and people who is often here, Natalie. I also have Karen and Brittany on with me today, who are, again, regular people who are here, who have ownership of this podcast. And we are joined. It has. Karen has been not here for a while, and Brittany was not on our last episode either. The last episode we did was myself, Mitch, and a guest, Christopher Gutierrez, who, good news, everyone, if you listen to that episode, he just signed the lease on the property that the rescue is going to be in. If you listen to that episode about his cat arcade, cat rescue cafe. So that's going ahead as planned. It took them a really long time to find a property, but that's happening. So anyway, point is, Brittany and Karen haven't been on in a while. They're both here. Hello.
Hi.
17's my favorite number, so this is lucky.
Oh, good.
17 is your favorite number?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did.
And we are also joined by another podcasting friend of ours today, Jack, who you may remember from such podcasts as Glee Chat and Avatar Rewatchable, and just hanging out with us and hanging out on the other side of Australia with me. So hi, Jack.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's so exciting. I haven't recorded with you guys in like, I think probably 2 years, to be honest. I think last time I was on a podcast was like 6 months ago. We did Mitch and I did a comeback for our Pokemon podcast that we did because of a new game. But other than that, it's been like so long. So you thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Whenever you want. Like, I just,
I messaged you like months ago and I was like, hey, when am I going to be on? And you were just like, oh yeah, soon. And now it's like June or July. And I'm like, okay.
That's soon for Natalie. It's soon.
We actually had a plan with Jack and Brittany and myself that was meant to go ahead around 3 weeks ago that then wasn't able to go ahead because my internet, it was like the day that my internet fell over, basically. So he's here now and he can come on whenever he wants, if he wants to. I feel like he, you know, the more the merrier with our podcasting family. It's all good.
Oh, thank you.
It's
all good. Good timing, though. Like, really good timing to have me on. Like, I am, like, I'm on my uni break now. So, like, I was like, yes, Natalie. Thank you.
yeah, because I work at a university as well, and it's dead at the moment. Like, it's like a ghost town. So, yeah.
For me, there's not really much of a break because, like, I'm going to accept into honors. So, I'm doing my project still, and that, like, takes, like, I have to do that during the break as well. So, like, it's not much of a break, but it's less stressful.
Is your degree?
Psychology. So I'm doing my fourth year honours and I get to conduct my research and then present that project in like a dissertation. And then like that'll be it. And then I'll graduate and finally be finished.
That's cool. Are you planning to practice as a therapist or are you planning to do something else?
Not therapy. I don't really know too much what I want to do just yet. Like, the first sort of step to do post-grad was to get into honours, which I managed to do. So I'm sort of just like taking things step by step and then figure that the rest out after, you know.
Well, if you do want to do an exchange to Sydney Uni, you could come hang out with me.
Well, Natalie, I think I might be in Sydney like in February next year, whatever Mardi Gras is on. I think we're going to Mardi Gras, so you should like totally come.
Oh, God. That's so fun. You don't want me to come to Mardi Gras with you because I'll fall asleep, but not because it's boring, but because I'm old. But, yes.
Yeah, we can have our own mini Mardi Gras, like, at a cafe or something.
You can definitely, yes, we'll hang out. Cool.
Yeah, cool.
All right. It is about time that you come to Sydney. So that's Jack. Jack is here. If you don't know Jack, Jack's cool. I've known Jack since he was like 10 years old. And he was a tiny baby fan of Glee.
Yeah, when I first started podcasting on Glee Chat, I was like, oh, I think I just graduated high school and I was like 17, I think, and now I'm really graduating university. Oh, I'm all grown up.
Yeah, you were definitely like 15 as a listener, I think. So
Yeah. Wow.
So weird. I feel very old. Okay. So us. You can contact us if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter at NATW Podcast. Also on Instagram at NATW Podcast, and we will be posting a lot of reunion selfies very soon. At Facebook/NATW Podcast. You can reach out to us in long form in an email at NATWpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find all our past episodes on our website, notaboutheweatherpodcast.com. You can also follow that as a Tumblr account and send us an ask. You can also find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or our main hub website, natwpodcast.com, which also serves as a hub for the other show we do specifically about Teen Wolf, which should be seeing some more action soon as the season kicks back in. Eventually, that'll happen one day at some point.
Okay, yeah. What the shit is happening with Teen Wolf? Like, I only watched like the first four episodes of season six, right? Only because like I was watching it with a friend, and then we like, you know, finished there for whatever reason. And then like now I don't know if they're like, it was like a season three situation where it was like A and then B, but then like it's been like 6 months since I watched it, so I don't know what the hell's happening.
Karen?
Neither does anybody else.
Really? Like they're just like kind of halfway through the season.
Yeah, it is.
They have to have a 10, so it's 20. It's meant to be 20 episode season, like a 10, mm-hmm. 10 episodes and then 10 episodes. But that last 10 episodes has vanished, basically.
It'll come back eventually, but I've heard rumors on the internet that it was going to be end of July, and then I heard others that were saying it was like September. So.
Have they like finished filming it all yet and like it's ready to go, or they just haven't announced when they're doing it?
It's been done for a while.
Yeah, because they had all of the stuff. They had all of the stuff that was like the breakdown of the set, like the final day of filming when, you know, they had a cake and like, okay, Teen Wolf is done. Like Teen Wolf as an entity no longer exists. Like it's going to air, but there's no, you know, they're not writing, they're not filming, that the production is shut down, if you know what I mean. Yeah. It is finished as a business. Which is depressing, but I was assuming they were going to be airing before Comic Con, which has not happened. So I don't know.
How did you guys like the first half of season six? I haven't really finished it yet, but like it seemed pretty like fresh, which is you know interesting for like the last season.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, God, sorry, a thing just fell off.
I still have no idea if Styles is, like, actually going to come back yet, but I'm assuming that he does.
He does. He will, yes, spoiler alert, I don't know. It's out already. He does not die or anything.
Yeah, however, I don't kill Styles off.
I don't know if he's going to be back in season 6B, except maybe for the very last episode. I don't know exactly. The place that they leave 6A felt like the end of that character. So
that's really depressing.
Look, we've talked about it a lot, okay? It's very
I'm sorry. I haven't listened to you guys because I haven't like finished the season.
It's a very stressful situation and we don't know how to feel about it. So yeah. Isn't that right, Karen?
Yeah.
I have a lot of feelings about it. So I think you should just have me on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast.
Always. You're always welcome.
You on Another Teen Wolf podcast. Remember that time you came on and I told you things and you had to guess whether they were true or not or whatever it was?
Remember when you asked me where the show was set and I had no idea?
Thank God.
Wait, We did like a swappy episode with Brittany and myself of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which was that we did like quiz questions to each other about shows that we'd never seen. Like she did Once Upon a Time for me and I did Teen Wolf for her, and Karen has seen both shows. And we got asked questions about the show we'd never seen to see how much osmosis we knew just from fandom. Anyway, it was good times. Brittany still doesn't know who Styles is.
Yeah, it's like
I could, if you put all of the men of Teen Wolf together in a line, I would probably pick the wrong person.
That really
that's surprising, just based on like Dylan O'Brien's presence, like as a
human. It is Dylan O'Brien. Okay.
So you know who Dylan O'Brien is?
Yes. No, and that's who I always think Styles is, but then I got it wrong on the podcast. No,
that is correct. That is correct. Anyway, shall we kick this off? So, yes, point is we do a Teen Wolf podcast, which will be, you know, carrying on until the show ends and then potentially afterwards if we feel like it every now and then. But this show kind of grew out of that show and the fact that that show was sort of had a shelf life. And the community that we had around it is not something we wanted to have a shelf life. So we started a general interest podcast, which can have no shelf life ever because we're always going to be interested in something. Isn't that great? Yes. Cool. So if you haven't listened to us before, the main thing that we're going to do is talk about things we're interested in, both in a positive and negative fashion. So each of us has got something that they want to share their enthusiasm for this week, and each of us has got something that they kind of want to complain about this week that's got them het up. We call this segment our hypes and gripes, or an obsession to share and a grievance to air, which is my worst poetry ever. Karen's like, I like it. Okay, well, you know. Do we want to go hypes or gripes first? Anyone got a feeling? Jack, how do you like that?
I don't mind. Don't make me choose.
Sometimes we flip a coin. Sometimes we decide we don't want to end on a downer. Or sometimes, like, sometimes someone's like, I have something I want to start on right now. So does anyone have a feeling today?
I'm pretty interested in hearing what Britney's MTV thing is. So maybe that one, the gripes.
That's actually a good point, given that we just spoke about Teen Wolf.
Yeah, segues.
MTV is directly related. But wow, yeah, what a neat segue. We totally did that on purpose. Okay, we'll start with gripes, and therefore we will start with Britney on gripes. So, yeah, cool.
Great.
Good to go with that. I have strong feelings about this as well, so good. Brittany, go.
All right. So this was a bad week for writers and copy editors, especially those who... What?
Nothing. I'm just like...
So basically what happened this week at MTV, it's kind of two things that I want to touch on. So there's the MTV News and the New York Times copy editors. And so in regards to MTV News, they reformatted what they want to focus on. There was an executive shift at the network and of who's heading up their online content. And they decided that, you know, they want to switch to video. And therefore, they laid off a ton of their writers. So there are no more. Everything on MTV News is now video driven because I guess maybe this person who is coming in to take over wants to get back to the good old days of when MTV was just all about music videos. And so they're switching their news to videos, and therefore there are no more writers needed. So the long form content and all of that is going away. And this is something that has happened also recently with ESPN, well, not so recently, maybe a year or two ago, with ESPN and shutting down its Grantland component, which was one of my favorite places to go for long form content. And a lot of those writers went to MTV News and are now seeing layoffs again. And, you know, Bill Simmons, who was in charge of Grantland, started The Ringer, and now that's where I go for the content that I was missing from Grantland. But I'm just frustrated with seeing this long form disappear and executives coming in and saying, well, no one has the attention span to read any long form. And that's not true at all. There are a bunch of tweets embedded in this particular article. There are lots of articles about this MTV layoffs, but there are tweets in here from writers who were affected by the layoff. And one of them even just cites the fact that, like, when the news broke, he was in a room full of teens who were just talking about writing and wanting to read these longer pieces about language and how you can get all of everything you want to say on the page. And they're willing to sit there and read these in-depth articles, as shown by even Natalie's Supernatural posts. They are so long, but they are the most engaging. I read them and I don't watch Supernatural. So I don't understand why people think that people don't have an attention span anymore. Sure, the things that are going to get more clicks and drive advertising are videos, and also, you know, the shorter articles where you could just basically you get the news in the headline. And that's only one component of online writing, and it's getting annoying as, you know, a writer and part of a generation who wants to read the longer stuff. Like, no one pays attention to what the younger people are doing. It's like, oh, I'm sharing this recipe that has literally 9,000 ads on my Facebook page, and I am like a 56-year-old housewife. Like that.
Yeah, I was going to say Facebook moms don't want the long form.
Exactly.
Content.
Exactly. Yeah. But they're just not like actively listening to their audience. And that kind of ties into this New York Times. So what's happening at the New York Times is they want to cut down the number of copy editors and restructure what type of work they're doing. And the copy editors wrote this letter to the editors basically saying, like, here are all the things you're not paying attention to. Here's what we do as copy editors. Here's what is being affected by our work. And we're asking you not to eliminate our jobs and have us fighting for just recognition. And like, they literally have to prove what they do day in and day out, and they're tired of it. So they think that, you know, getting rid of the copy desk is like, oh, good, we can like save some money. And like, you know, but the copy editors are like, no, you don't even know what we do. So it's so annoying because we have this problem. So I work in publishing, and we're having this problem where we are also understaffed in our copy department. And, you know, you have the writers on one hand who are like, oh, like, we need copy. Like, they understand it. But then you have the marketing people who are like, well, our stuff's more important. We just need you to check it for grammar. And it's like, you know, they serve both ends of the company. And it's like this disconnect at the New York Times is basically what's happening on smaller levels. And I'm sure it's happening in other places where the copy department, the people who are hiring the copy departments are like, oh, all they do is just like check to make sure that the commas are in the right place and we're using the proper adverbs in the right place. And it's like, no, that's not what they do. Like, they make things better and they make sure you don't sound like an idiot. And it's not just checking grammar and punctuation. And so that article was making me mad. And I had a very long discussion with our copy chief about it because I was like, I'm angry. And she's like, okay, I am also angry, but I'm also not as angry as you. I appreciate your support. So I'm just frustrated with the state of everything on the internet and in print and beyond, and people in positions of authority making decisions without listening to what audiences want and what the people who are working for them want. They just don't, they're not seeing the magnitude of what's being done on a lower and smaller scale.
Yeah. This is sort of, like a mindset that bothers me in a lot of aspects of the industry. Like it bothers me in television. It bothers me in most forms of creation is when higher ups, and it usually goes pretty high, it usually goes high enough for the people doing it to be pretty out of touch with the audience, who make decisions about what they're producing that kind of pander to the lowest common denominator of consumer, if that makes sense. And they're like, you know, we have to cater to that short attention span, as opposed to, hey, how about you like broaden people's minds and get them to engage more or something like that. And yes, there are definitely sites that have that kind of audience who like, yeah, everyone there is going there is going to be like a voracious reader, if you know, you know, who want that kind of long form content, and maybe those ones are surviving. But for example, MTV News was one of the better sites for like pop culture news. It had a good tone, their interviews were good, and that would be that quote unquote lowest common denominator of readers. That might be like, you know, young people, it might be people that aren't super like, oh, you know, academic, it might be people who are not super like deep fandomy, who are used to reading like intense meta essays and stuff like that. Might be people that just want their reality TV updates, but the tone of the writing there was good. And the fact that they would not see value in that like really bothers me. And the long form thing in general, like Brittany mentioned, my most recent article for Hyperbole was a summary of a Spider-Man panel that I went to with the director of Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man coming out. And it was really good, but I was like, oh, this is a news piece. This is like a summary of a panel. It's going to be 500 words. Yeah, it was 1,600. Like I aimed for 500 and it was 1,600. My longest article for Supernatural is 7,500 words. And it is one of the most viewed articles I've ever had. It is definitely the most reblogged on Tumblr. Like it has thousands of notes on Tumblr. My Poe Dameron one, which is cited on Wikipedia, is 5,500 words. Like that's how I write. And I am quote unquote lucky enough to like not be trying to feed myself off it or not be trying to like struggle as a writer, because I have another career which I'm, you know, pretty happy with. But for the people that are, and for the people that are doing that as a job and being told to dumb it down, or told that people, you know, told to cater to that short attention span to help make people dumber, basically, really bothers me. Like it's obviously something that we've talked about before, just as the style of online writing changes, but it's becoming more and more obvious as these sites shut down. One of the big comic book commentary sites just shut down as well. And again, I don't know if it was for the same reason. The MTV one is kind of bad because it's so brazen. It's like they literally said that was the reason, as opposed to being like, we can't afford to run or something, which is often true. But just in general, the way that BuzzFeed, like people are paid to work at BuzzFeed and make lists about like a potato that looks like Channing Tatum. Like fuck you.
And just
you.
Copy and paste tweets into their article without
That's another thing that really bothers me. This like, this is so tangential, but it's all tied into like this kind of dumbing down of online content. Like the posts where people will go and take like quote unquote organic memes, like something that's naturally become like something funny on Tumblr and like translate it for the Facebook mums into a BuzzFeed article kills me. I just can't handle it. And I'm like, if this is where we're going, I just can't deal with it. And the fact that MTV have done this, have like, you know, outright said, yeah, we don't want writing, we want videos. And I don't like watching videos for news at all either. So
I'm the same. I'm the same.
I don't know. Like I just, there's so many factors of this that bother me, but yeah, I don't know. Karen, you've heard my various complaints. Because honestly, like, even about my own writing, it's been said that it is not by readers, but it has been said that it might be too long, or that, like, you know, stuff like the sentences and stuff might be too long. And I'm like, but I read articles on other sites that have this much length, that have this much tone, you know, and then others, and then I read articles on other sites that are like really broken down, really like really, really basic. Like, I'm like, did, like, who wrote this? Like, what is this style? Like, what are you catering to here? And so I don't understand sort of where these decisions get made or how financially viable it is. Do people like really drop off with their engagement, or are people really seeking out that kind of like short form writing versus the long form writing? Like, I know I write the kind of stuff that I want to read, basically. And so I don't know, you know, the monetary differences, like the amount of people who are wanting whatever MTV is now going to produce, or, you know, something like that. But I don't know. There's a lot about this that bothers me for various reasons.
I have a lot of feelings about this just because it's very personal for me as a freelance writer and copy editor. So on the one hand, MTV getting rid of their writers like this, their news writers, I mean, even if you go to video, like, you do realize you need to, like, write a script, right? So why not
why can't those people be the hosts of the video or whatever, you know? Like,
or write the scripts that the people on screen are going to be reading, because that's how that works. So that in and of itself is frustrating. I love BuzzFeed. I read their articles about potatoes that look like Channing Tatum. I have no shame in that. It's funny. But I also read long form stuff. And I think a lot of people vary their style like that depending on what the subject is. And the idea that it has to be one or the other doesn't make sense to me. There's a lot of really good writers out there who will write short form articles that can be quite interesting. But I love reading long form stuff too, because to really break down something that I love is like kind of why we're here to begin with. So I don't know why they feel like they have to get rid of people who are good writers because they're looking to cash in, when you should use those people to cash in to begin with. Because, like, spoiler alert, writing's never gonna go away. Like, you can you can rely on video all you want, but you're always going to need writers. It's been around for kind of a long time, and I don't think it's disappearing anytime soon. So, and on the flip side of that, copy editors, like, literally my job, I have edited so many things in the last like 5 years since I've started doing it. And trust me, you guys need us. Don't get rid of your copy editors, because like Brittany was saying, it is so much more than, hey, you forgot a comma here. Like, copy editors help strengthen sentences and make things more concise and understandable. And the truth of the matter is, you can't copy edit your own stuff and expect it to be perfect all of the time, because your brain fills in holes. So you're going to miss stuff. You need somebody else to read it. And the idea that the New York Times is going to be getting rid of all of those copy editors is just astounding to me.
I think sort of what somebody said before, like, who are these higher up people that are making these decisions that are really going to affect so much other stuff when it comes to their consumers and actually people reading the articles? And Karen, you hit like the nail on the head, but I was going to say, like, I don't like this mentality that has to be one or the other, you know, because I personally don't like watching videos for my news. I, you know, when I'm on my phone, I don't usually have my headphones in or anything. I'm just sort of scrolling through Facebook, and it's easy for me to click on an article that goes directly to the site to read the news article and whatnot, you know. And so MTV, I hope this isn't reflective of like other sites doing the same thing, because it's just going to alienate a whole audience that doesn't necessarily like to consume their news and pop culture content that way, you know.
I will like take back the name drop of BuzzFeed particularly, because BuzzFeed is kind of a very easy way to say that, because they do the potatoes that look like Channing Tatum. They also have long form. It's just that it's kind of what they were doing with short form has become like so popular in like the Facebook world that it is like, I don't know, that it has become synonymous with that kind of journalism. And that's sort of, I guess, not fair on some of the writers at BuzzFeed, especially like the worldwide BuzzFeed sites, because there is some really amazing content on there. One in particular that I was like, holy shit, like BuzzFeed has done this, was a massive long form article about this homeless guy in the UK who started an awareness and then an importation of PrEP. So PrEP is the HIV preventative drug that was not available in the UK. And he brought, basically, he in the space of 12 months, he number of people getting diagnosed with HIV, AIDS in the UK had gone down to, had dropped by 40%. Anyway, it's this huge expose on this thing that he did. And it's amazing, amazing, amazing journalism. It happens to be on BuzzFeed because that's where the guy who was chasing the story, the guy heard about the story, chased it, followed it. BuzzFeed gives, or seems to give, a lot of freedom to their writers to pursue what is interesting to them and write about it the way that they want to. It just happens that some of that is potatoes that look like Channing Tatum, which, yes, Jack, I know it was real. It was a real work. Like, I was not
joking. I thought you were joking.
No, I was not joking. It's just, it's one of the go-to ones in my mind when I'm talking about BuzzFeed journalism. Anyway, but that kind of potato journalism, it makes me wonder, like, yeah, it's sometimes it's funny, especially when it's like natural, it's funny, it's gotten a bit repetitive, but with what they're doing with MTV, with what they're doing with the New York Times, because I've read a few articles at the New York Times recently which feel a bit like not what I would have expected from the New York Times, like even like tone and sentence structure not what I would have expected from the New York Times. So again, it kind of makes me wonder if it's a intentional dumbing down, like if it's an intentional, we want the kind of consumers that don't usually read, like we want more people, so we want people who don't usually engage, if you know what I mean, that are not actually, you know, readers, who are not people who want to read, but people who are, you know, on the internet because social media, not because they are the kind of people that would have sought out articles in the past. And that people that they want to cash in, that they want to get a bigger audience, more clicks from the kind of people that perhaps have never read for pleasure, you know, or people who have never engaged in that way. And I sort of don't know what to make of that. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I don't know if that's like, oh, people will start reading more, or if it's that people that have always been readers are now having their content diluted, you know?
I think that like this switch to video is definitely a huge social media thing, obviously, but I think if someone shares a video on something, you know, the other person who will see that are more likely to watch the video than instead if that person shared the article, you know? It's more, videos for people seem to be more engaging and more appealing and like visually like stimulating for people to watch as opposed just to reading an article, which I don't agree with that mentality, but I think that might be behind the decision for this switch.
And I don't know if this is like a coastal elites thing either, because like, you know, everyone on here right now is pretty academic. Everyone on here is used to engaging with content on a very analytical level and would not have the kind of issues engaging that maybe some other people would. And, you know, I don't know, like, what, you know, I don't know what someone else's experience would be like reading the kind of articles that I read, but all I know is sort of what I feel and then what my readers feel. And my readers are always like, so long, yay, etc. Like, so I don't know. I don't really know. Like, again, even fandom, it's not even academia, it's fandom. Fandom reads such long form stuff. Like fandom writes hundreds of thousands of words of meta about single episodes of television, and writes like novel length fan fiction books about, you know, shows or movies that ended years ago. Like, it's a lot of people who engage deeply with media are reading and writing long form all the time, And so I'm not sure who this is for. Like, I'm not sure who this switch is for, basically.
And it's for, like, Facebook. It's just the regular Facebook user. Like I said, if you share a video and somebody would rather watch a video on Facebook than read an article, because it's much more quicker and easier to get content in their eyes. You know, a 30-second video to those people, I think, is different than reading and sitting down for like a 2-minute, you know, long form, short form article, you know. And I think that, Natalie, I think your point's interesting, but I feel like those who are mostly engaged in fandom would seek out these articles and other, or their news and other forms other than Facebook, which would be more so catered towards.
Yeah, of course. Everyone I know in fandom,
Reddit, you know.
Yeah, everyone I know in fandom like hates Facebook. You know, like everyone. I think everyone who's like a long term internet user prior to Facebook hates Facebook culture. Like, the people who like Facebook are the people who got on the internet because of Facebook. If you know what I mean. That might be a generalization, but.
No, I actually, this is kind of, if we don't mind, I actually want to segue like perfectly from this writing into Jack's point, because it made me think. I just read, well, this is like, because this idea of like having these writers in fandom who write, like if you like a writer and they're known for their long form, I will literally read anything that they write, even if it's about something that I don't know about or watch or anything. And this past week, Carolyn Frank for Vox wrote this long form essay about RuPaul's Drag Race and how she went to the drag con, and it was like, it's all about teens and how much they love RuPaul's Drag Race. And I was like, I would have never known this, but I read this really long article on Vox about it and it was great. And so I saw Jack wants to talk about RuPaul's Drag Race, and I was like, all right, perfect. Internet culture and RuPaul, let's do it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we can move on if you want, unless somebody has, like, you guys have anything else you want to add to Brittany's last point.
No, I think we're good. I think
rage.
I don't know, Karen.
Just rage. That's it.
It's not. I couldn't even talk about it. Like, everyone was talking about it on the day that it happened. I tried to think and say something. I just couldn't. I would have gone off the deep end in a way that I would have got in a fair amount of trouble for. So yeah, I was just like, I can't engage with this. But I'm glad that we have said this now. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, my point is, like, it's not about article writing. It's more so, it's something specific that I think is reflective of internet culture and fandom, like, on a larger scale. So, RuPaul's Drag Race. Are we allowed to swear on this show? Can we swear?
Yeah.
Natalie's been like dropping F bombs for the last half hour.
Okay. Well, I haven't even noticed. But yeah, yes, you can swear, yeah. Jack.
I love this show so much. I got into it maybe like 2 to 3 years ago. It was around the time that that Glee ended. So I think like my brain was just like, oh, your favorite obsession with the show has ended. Now you've got to find a different thing. So I became a big fan of it. It was like, at first it was like kind of like silly and fun. It was just sort of a good way just to sort of relax and wind down and watch some, like, you know, sassy drag queens be, you know, bitchy and fierce and stuff on TV. It was really like entertaining. But I think that, like, eventually as I, like, really watched it, it really, like, the show, this gets a bit deep, like, it really taught me to, like, embrace my femininity, I can't say that word, femininity, because, like, I, as, like, you know, growing up as gay and whatnot, like, you sort of, I think, like, one of the hardest parts is sort of, for me at least, was, like, you know, being expected to fall within, like, these ideas of masculinity and those associations that being gay means you should automatically be more feminine, which in my eyes made me push to sort of present myself as being more so masculine and ignore these like feminine attributes and stuff. So then, like, watching the show and sort of being so ingrained within just the show itself, this is separate from internet culture because I hadn't gotten into that yet, but like just with the show, it really, I think, taught me sort of how to sort of like be myself a bit more and, you know, just really like accept myself in all facets and whatnot. So it was really great. It means a lot to me. You know, it's like a show that is just a reality show about like drag queens and whatnot, but it really is more than that for myself, and I know for a lot of other fans as well. Anyway, so that's, you know, why I love though, the show. It's fun and it's really is quite personal to me and sort of how it sort of helped me become who I am and whatnot. Anyway, this last season and even like two seasons ago, so we're up to season eight and we're up to season nine now. And for the last two seasons, like the show's sort of changed. Like in the first, like, you know, seasons one through seven, they like the show was really like the queens were really competitive, really like bitchy. They would get into like almost physical fights. It was, but also, you know, there's this whole sense of community they all have with one another, but it was really like dramatic and really intense and whatnot. And these last two seasons have been like kind of like basic, like kind of lackluster, and they don't really sort of, there's less sort of that competitive nature. It's less sort of like intense, and there's less cattiness and whatnot. And I think a reason for this is because of how intense internet fandom is for this show. Like, they've discussed on the show itself that, like, these, like, drag queens literally get, like, death threats. Like, they get, like, there was one queen in particular, which is, I don't enjoy it at all, but I would never wish, like, harm to her. She got threatened, had acid thrown in her face, and she, like, would get so, like...
By the audience or, like, by another...
By fandom. So like people in
like
fandom.
Threats
online.
In fandom. Yeah.
Threats in fandom. Yeah. So like they like on a Facebook post to like they'll comment, you know, you should die. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, a bunch of like even though these queens get on the show, a bunch of their income for performing so their income comes after the show when they perform at clubs and whatnot. And so these queens that would get literal death threats for how they have been presented on the show, which is a mixture of, you know, who they are, but also editing and whatnot, because it's a TV show, they won't get booked for these clubs to perform, which means they won't get any money, which means that, you know, they've just been known online as like this huge like bitch and just and their life is like not life is over, but like things are going to be a lot harder for them, which is even more so damaging because of how popular the show is now. And how accessible the show is, like on Australia. When I first started watching it 2 or 3 years ago, we had to go on like Project Free TV and watch a, you know, a really bad version of the show because you couldn't find it anywhere. But now it's on Stan, which is a huge streaming service here in Australia, and I know it's available on Netflix and many other places. And now it's like this last season has been on VH1, which I think gets a pretty is pretty large in America. I think you guys might better tell me. Like more fans are watching it basically, and that's even more so damaging.
I feel like there's been ton of hype about it, like even just online. I've heard more in the last year or two about RuPaul. Like, I feel like everyone, not everyone I know, but I hear it trickling through, like, into my social media and everything much more than I ever have before.
Yeah. Yeah, so like to sort of summarize what I was just saying then, like the basically like when these queens go on the show, they need to be careful of how they present themselves and how they could potentially be edited because the fans are fucking crazy and so many people actually send them death threats, which makes them not be booked for clubs because they're actually feared for their own safety, you know? And it's just really, really upsetting because not only does it like actually not only does it affect the show, which, you know, the whole grand scheme of things isn't important when it comes to the safety of these people, but it affects the show and sort of how much it's changed to cater towards this larger audience that it's gotten because it's now on VH1, but also because queens are more, like, careful about how they present themselves, you know, for the reasons I said. But also, it just, like, internet culture, it just pisses me off because everybody, like, now is because social media and everything and the internet is so big, everybody has the platform, which means that everybody thinks they should be allowed to have, well, they should, everyone's allowed to have a voice, but everyone thinks they should express it whenever they choose, whenever they want to, you know? Sometimes I think people should choose when to. And I think that, like, it's just awful. Like, cause this show, like, it's different. I feel like it's different when talking about an actual character on a TV show. And you can say about a character, you want them to die, want them to be killed off, or want them to, it's a character in the day. You're not actually wishing harm on that person unless you're talking about the actor, which is different. But with these queens, they get such immense death threats that like it's actually to them as a person when they don't even know the person. And it's just this whole cycle of awfulness that is happening like right now within the show, and it's only getting worse when the show is, like you said, Natalie, is getting bigger and going to a much bigger audience. And it's just really upsetting because I think that internet fandom can be fantastic and great in the right places. Like, I know Reddit sometimes with RuPaul's Drag Race gets a bit of a bad rap, but it's actually, in my opinion, the best place because most people there are respectful and whatnot. It's just Facebook and Twitter, which is just horrible because people can just write a quick short comment. And then when there's like 1,000 of those towards the person reading them, it just goes like, it's just really awful. And yeah, so I suppose like my point there is that internet culture can just be really, really aggressive and really violent. And especially when it's affecting people specifically, it's just really awful.
Yeah.
And it's just so worrying now that, like I said, the show is sort of getting more, like getting bigger and stuff. And in saying all this, the show is really good in addressing this kind of stuff, you know, like in the All Stars 2, which aired last year, and this latest season, they have had segments where, you know, the queens, you know, they talk about their stuff while they do their makeup and whatnot. And like a few times they've spoken about how these queens have received death threats and whatnot, and how they're scared for what's going to happen after the show. And they do this in attempts to try and reduce it happening when the show airs. But it's just, yeah, it's just really, really awful. So I suppose, like, my major point there is internet fandom just needs to calm down and just enjoy the damn show. It's a show about fucking drag queens. You know what I mean? Like, it's, don't take it so seriously. It's there, we're there to have fun and enjoy a TV show. So, yeah. Sorry, I got really heated there, but it's been bothering me for quite a while.
No, I think it's really actually part of the same problem, vaguely, that we were just talking about, because I think it is to do with the shift of who uses the internet. I think that this change, because people, it's not just this show, it is all over. Today on Twitter, my favorite reality-based show is The Great British Bake Off, which is very different to RuPaul's Drag Race.
So good. It's such a good show, yes.
Anyway, the winner of my favorite season, Nadia, is a Bangladeshi Muslim woman, and she wears like a turban hijab, and she's, you know, on the BBC now, and she writes an article in the newspaper and stuff, and she is doing the thing, I don't know if you guys saw it all, anything about CBeebies, which is the BBC's children's channel, doing like bedtime stories with celebrities. So there was like that thing where Chris Evans read a bedtime story with his dog and like the internet like wet themselves, and like Tom Hardy did one and stuff. Anyway, yeah, so Tom Hardy did one, and I think a few other celebrities have done it. Anyway, it's meant for children. Obviously when Tom Hardy did it, it was people who were not children were like dying. She did one, and people were sending her the most racist like tweets, and she was kind of like retweeting them and sort of being kind of polite about their rudeness, but like someone was like, oh god, even the children are witnessing the invasion, as in because she's
a
South Asian woman with a headscarf, really. And I'm like, she's an innocent baker. Like, what is your, like, it's super, super volatile, and she apparently gets this kind of hate, like, all the time. And I feel like it is just, well, not just, it's a big thing, but I feel like the kind of people that used to use the internet, it basically used to be harder to engage with people on the internet, whether that's engaging with a celebrity directly on Twitter or Instagram, and even with other people who were interested in the same thing. You know, people were on forums or LiveJournal, and you would have to go and really seek that out because you were really interested in the thing, and you would go, and there was kind of a fourth wall around you. You know, you were there in your little internet group, doing your little internet thing. And so it was only kind of a certain type of person about whatever it was. You know, it might have been a sports forum, it might have been a Buffy forum. But you had to have a certain mindset of how you engaged to go on and do a forum, you know, to be in a forum. And within that, there was usually kind of a sense of decorum that was sort of a training for how to act on the internet, whether it's like, you know, because you'd come in and you'd be in a communal area, and you would be kind of, oh, did I say something out of line? Or, you know, and, you know, and if you broke the rules, it would usually be moderated. If you broke the rules, you'd be kicked out, you know, like, or you'd get the message from, like, people who were more experienced that, you know, that's not how you act here or something like that. And then Tumblr and Twitter came in, and the difference about the way that fans engage on Tumblr and Twitter is that there is no communal space. It might feel like a community, but it's not. It's everyone's own personal blog, basically, or their own personal account. So there's no, like, if you're saying, hey, we don't do that here, you're directly saying that to someone. You're coming onto someone's account and directly shutting them down, as opposed to, like, it being said in a community thread. You know, you're actually doing it directly at someone. And they also have the ability, and this is a big part of it, they also have the ability to create an echo chamber. They can, if they, they're not like joining a forum to talk about Buffy where they have to see everyone's opinion, you know, regardless of whether they like it or not. They can go and curate who they follow now, you know, like, and only be hearing opinions that validate their own, which means that they think they're never wrong. I remember the first time I saw something like this and I was like, what the hell? This never would have happened before. Was on early days of Tumblr, a girl who went to the house of, well, it wasn't a band I liked, but it was a band I was aware of because they had toured with other bands that I liked, and waited outside his house and went and, you know, until he came out and took photos with her. And I was like horrified. But she was posting this on her Tumblr, and then whenever people would, like, reply to her on her Tumblr, like, go into her ask box and be like, you know, this is really wrong, right? She would be like, you can't come in here and bully me. As opposed to if that had happened in a LiveJournal community about the band, there would have been the overarching umbrella of the – this is a discussion within the community. This is obviously, like – you have to view the opinions of people at large about this, and you are clearly not in the right here, if you know what I mean. People are able to validate their own opinions and often their own hate a lot easier, especially the people that came in only through social media rather than people that used the internet before social media. I think it's a very big change in the kind of people coming in online, like the kind of people engaging online, and it's probably the same kind of people who are coming in to the internet only through social media who apparently can't read long form articles either for whatever reason.
No, I think that that's a great point, because with new shows that come out that I love, I have this like list that is in my head and I'm like, okay, if these writers are writing about it, I'll read whatever they write. And if that goes along with the long form thing you were just bringing up, like, I know that these writers are going to give the care and attention, even if they don't like it. I'm actively seeking out their opinion on something that I am enjoying, or even if it's something I don't like, why are they enjoying it? Those are the people I seek out. Since Glee, have not actively went and looked at a fandom for anything, because it makes me uncomfortable. Like, I will not look for things on Tumblr unless I'm looking for like a gif of something, and then sometimes, you know, your eye just gets drawn to the stuff. Like, it's like on Twitter, like it, you know, you see the one comment and then like something is ruined, and it's not even attacking me or anything. It's just like, oh well, why did they choose to cut this scene in this way, and now it's ruining everything about this relationship and blah blah. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't I can't engage with anything because it's just, it's too much. Like, I don't want to read, even in retroactively, like, I don't care about, I love Rewatchable and I care about our opinions on things. I don't want to read what people, other people think about Buffy or Avatar or anything, because it just, it taints any type of viewing experience. Like, I feel like I'm not allowed to like enjoy something as a person, because it's not like, you know, oh, you're not as big of a fan because you didn't dissect 45 seconds of this and read it the way that I did. And I'm like, I don't care
how you read it. Brittany, that's exactly how I feel as well. That's so much stuff, especially, I mean, I know you guys are spoken about this on a previous podcast, but the whole stuff going on with Harry Potter right now, like, I haven't read the Cursed Child screenplay, and I haven't read any of J.K. Rowling's 1,000 pointless tweets. Like, but like, to me, I was having this conversation with somebody else the other day, like, they didn't say I wasn't a fan, but like, even just like, right, talking to them about Harry Potter, I feel like I had to be like, oh no, I'm a massive fan. I'm like, you know, it's fucking Harry Potter and it's me. Like, I'm a huge fan. I'm wearing a jacket right now that has mudblood on it. Like, you know, but like, I had to sort of, in my writing, I had to justify that, like, oh, I haven't gone out and seeked out all this other content, but I'm still a fan. You know what I mean? It's just that whole label of a fan is so annoying to me now, you know? Anyway, I know that deviates a bit, but I just had to get that out.
No, it's fair. I mean, Brittany, what you just described about fandoms is why I went out for Glee Chat as well. It's because I was like, I want to get out of these trenches and just be, I kind of wanted to create my own echo chamber, to be honest, which is maybe not that great, but I wanted to be not having to deal with people.
No, and
being self-righteous I just wanted to, but yeah, I think that the especially the hate, I think, comes from the echo chamber of social media of not being in a reasonable community. It's surrounding yourself with people who validate your skewed point of view. And I think that's why people think they can get away with this kind of stuff, because they're coming in and, feeling like getting it made normalized to them, basically.
And to them, it's like they also feel like they're anonymous as well, and that, like, they're one tweet a sea of like 1,000 other people saying the same thing, that it doesn't matter what they say because, you know, everyone else is saying it as well. And that's why I really dislike the whole fad and meme of mean tweets, because when celebrities read out mean tweets, it makes it think it's okay. And bringing it back to sort of my Drag Race point, like, I remember I was watching a video the other day about, you know, drag queens reading mean tweets, whatever, and like the comments on that was also so awful on YouTube. That was like exactly sort of what they were trying to say in the video. It just perpetuates this idea that like it's okay to be doing these mean tweets because it's funny and people love it, and, you know, you keep being abusive towards these people, it's okay. But like, it's not, and it's just this whole stupid idea that it's just really hard for me to get my head around sometimes, you know.
I initially liked the idea of the mean tweets because I think it showed that these celebrities saw them and that they were real people, and that, you know, it could maybe get to them because it wasn't just, you know, throwing something at the wall and none of it sticking. Like, sometimes they do see the stuff that these people say to them, but I think now that idea has gotten lost, and they do just, you know, a lot of people just see it as funny or, haha, maybe if I say something, then they'll read my tweet.
Yeah. And
be internet famous for half a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I have positive to say about mean tweets, celebrities read mean tweets, is the time that they had Oscar Isaac read one that said, I can almost quote it verbatim, but it was like, "Oscar Isaac is a hipster piece of trash and I want to fight him," by a girl. You're familiar with the internet. This was not an insult. This was this person's way of saying that they are in love with Oscar Isaac, and whoever was compiling the mean tweets clearly did not realize the nuance of fandom behavior, basically. So that was, to me, the kind of moment where I was like, oh, I don't think they know what's happening here. It was Oscar Isaac is a Brooklyn hipster piece of trash and I'm going to fight him. And this was not an insult. This was a love tweet. So, I don't know. It is a weird, I like it whenever it is, like, whenever people do address it and basically make, you know, the people doing that have to face up to it. And I don't know if that's something that the people on RuPaul's do, like, if they actually are like, hey, what makes you think it's okay to say that or anything like that.
But, yeah, there actually has been a lot more these last two seasons, which has been really good, especially in an episode last season, one of the last episodes, they called out a queen in particular who wasn't defending the other queens when the fans were being really shit towards the other people, because, like, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I suppose as, like, a summary for, like, all of this, just if you're online and you want to engage with people, or even if you feel like you have a view to express which you think may be negative, especially when it's towards somebody in particular, not a character, you know, somebody who is an actor or somebody who is being portrayed on a reality TV show, maybe think twice. And if your comment is actually going to add anything to the world that you think is going to be beneficial to that person's life, okay? Because it's just too much sometimes, and it really makes you look like a fucking fool, and it also really creates this damaging culture online, which is not going to affect anybody's experiences with this, you know, form of entertainment. And drop the mic, I'm out.
Oh, good. Very good. And that, like, choosing to not be negative just for the sake of it, like, in the last couple of years, I cannot tell you the amount of, like, complain or just, like, negative, like, tweets I've started writing trashing something. Usually not a person. Usually it'll usually be something fictional or an opinion or something like that that I have, like, written and then backspaced on because I am actively trying to not, unless something is objectively problematic, to not trash stuff that other people care about. So
I think the only one time I've ever found a mean tweet or a negative comment on mine funny is, bringing back to Glee for a second, is on in season three when Kurt didn't get accepted into Niada and Rachel did, and then, like, so somebody said something like, oh, Kurt should have been on that train and Ryan Murphy should have been under it or something like that. And that was really funny
to
me.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, there was Glee put us through a lot, didn't it? But, yeah.
I feel like the stronger because of it.
Oh, I know. Anyway.
Sorry. Do you guys watch RuPaul's Drag Race or no?
I've watched a few episodes here and there, like when it's on TV and I'm like, oh, I'll watch this now. But nothing like religiously.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. I don't watch very much reality television at all. But I have a friend who is obsessed. Actually, a couple of friends, one who got the other into it, like obsessed to the level of you. Like most of the people you talk about, when I see them on your Facebook, I know them because I know their names already through her. Like really obsessed. So, yeah.
The amount of money I've spent on, like, you know, going to the shows that the drag queens go to is absurd. And merchandise, oh my God.
Yeah.
Good time. Thanks for indulging me, guys.
No, it's good. It's good. It's good. Where are we up to? Karen, what's up?
Yeah. All right. So I came across an article from the Hollywood Reporter this week that makes me mad, but is also, I think, really good for discussion. So this is titled, "The Fans Have Inherited the Film Industry and It's a Problem for the Rest of Us." And basically...
Oh, I can see where this is going already. Yeah, okay, yeah. Carry on.
So basically the subheading for this is, "For filmgoers and critics who don't keep up with every Marvel project, are only casual Star Wars fans, or miss the Harry Potter train, mainstream movie culture has become frustratingly exclusionary." And they go on to talk about...
I'm just going to stop you. Fuck you. Not you. Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy. Okay, please carry on.
So basically this person that's writing this is talking about how difficult it is to understand pop culture when you are uninterested in watching 18 movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And the article, I will say, is very well written. They do come up with other things saying, like, yes, I know that I could, like, read the Wikipedia page, or I know that I could just go see the movie. But they're talking about, you know, when something like Mary came out or whatever, that there's something about Mary came out. You know, if you missed it, it was kind of over with. And it's fine if you didn't necessarily see it. You missed, like, you know, pop culture's high point with this movie, with the references and stuff, but then, like, you kind of got over it. Except now with the MCU, you know, it's just this huge entity, and if you're not into it, you miss out on all of this stuff. And my immediate reaction to this was, first of all, if you don't want to see it, then don't go see it. Nobody's forcing you to do this. And secondly, you can watch these movies. I mean, Britney literally did it. You can watch the MCU out of order. You don't necessarily, like, I could never do that, but you don't necessarily have to, you know, watch every single one or understand every reference, because, hello, spoiler alert, that's kind of how the film industry works. And I know we're going to be talking about this later, but they're like, I saw Baby Driver, and there are a lot of references in Baby Driver. There are a lot of references in other movies that I don't get. I am a super casual Star Wars fan. You think I could name more than 5 characters? Probably not, but I still enjoy
Force Awakens. I think you can name more than 5 characters. Maybe. But anyway, let's carry on.
But, you
maybe
know,
not more than 10.
It's really frustrating to me, though, that, like, the fans have inherited the film industry. No, we always had it. It's always been ours. That's why they make movies. Is
without
for
the fans, there'd be no movies.
Exactly. And this idea that, like, yes, I get that there's a crazy amount of superhero movies right now, and if that's not your thing, fine. But that's not
stopping you from seeing
other movies.
I don't even think it's the superhero factor. I don't think it's, like, she's, you know, mentioned Harry Potter. I think this is the same as Brittany's point. I think this is someone saying, I don't, like, you're making this too hard. You're making this, you have to be a big fan to understand this. You have to be engaging on another level to understand this. And I want movies that are dumbed down for me, basically. Or not dumbed down, but, like, that don't require this level of engagement. And that, you know, there are still a lot of standalone movies that exist, but the franchises, the fact that they are a continuation, that they're serialized like television, allows for those movies to be better and to be deep, like deeper character work, because you're not like packing in like to tiny little fragments like that we're never gonna see again. Like the fact that we have like 16 movies that Tony Stark's characterization spreads over, or that Steve Rogers' characterization spreads over, means that those are characters that have the amount of depth as a good television character. And everyone knows television is the highest medium for character development, the highest medium for writing, like for screenwriting. Is the way that you can serialize television and what you can do with that. Marvel MCU is a serialized world, like in the same way that television is. Harry Potter was obviously always going to be serialized as it was 7 books. And I don't think that it's fair to be engaging, like to be saying this kind of thing is a negative thing. Like, I don't know, with the superhero movies, I don't know if the writer is trying to say that they should all be unrelated, like that they want to watch superhero movies, but they want them to be all unrelated and like not be the kind of one that requires, you know, a tie-in to anything else. But those tie-ins are what makes them better movies, not just because like, oh, it's like nerd references, but because it allows them to be more than just a popcorn flick, because you can go a lot deeper with what you're doing because you know the characters well, as opposed to, you know, I don't know. I feel like those kind of movies have, you know, taken a turn in terms of not just depth, but in what is allowed in the quote unquote superhero genre, because they don't have to hit that framework of, you know, introduce backstory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, every time. I don't understand why this is like a negative thing, except for that they're saying it's exclusionary. It's something that not everyone can understand. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's not meant for you then. Like maybe it's okay that you don't understand it. And also it's not like you can also go and see it without engaging on that level and still understand it. Like it's, and there's a lot of things here that.
There's one line here that really bothers me, and it's, Disney's not marching anyone into MCU summer school at gunpoint, but viewers who don't keep up with Marvel's annual output, 3 features this year, are at risk of being confused when they do drop into the overstuffed cinematic universes or of being shut out of a significant chunk of pop culture altogether. And it's like wanting.
What does that even mean?
Exactly. It's like, okay, so you want to be involved, you want to understand all these pop culture references, but you don't want to put in the work to get there in the first place. So do you or don't you want it? That's the frustrating part.
Yeah, Is it like, oh, I can't go to the office and, like, know what everyone's talking about at the lunch table, like, without, oh, I can't just go and see that movie to understand it. I have to see 16 movies to understand that movie. Like, I, if that's really what's going on, then I applaud Marvel for taking the risk of making things that do exclude audiences, that they actually will, that they're actually weighing up the creativity and the care for the you know, the characters and story against, hey, can we get people in that have never seen it before, or are we only going to get repeat viewers? If that's what they're doing and they're coming up with you know, character trumps money, then I applaud them. However, I don't actually think that's what it is. I think that's what Logan was. Side note, I think that's what they did with Logan, and it was amazing. Different studio, obviously, but with Disney and Marvel, I think that they're making movies that everyone can still see. Like, I think it's okay, guys.
Yeah, it's the best of both worlds. Like, I can, like, sit down and watch, you know, Captain America, Civil War, you know what I mean? And I'm not, I love the movies, but I haven't seen everything. But I can still sit there and have a very enjoyable experience without necessarily understanding the ins and outs, the intricacies of these characters interacting and, you know, references to previous movies if I haven't seen them all. But I can still enjoy it, you know, and then you guys can go and watch it and have a different experience that is just as valid, you know. I think Marvel does a really great job at that. So this guy writing this article is just trying to create this division when there isn't one.
Yeah, and as you guys know, I haven't seen pretty much anything. So I enjoyed Civil War, and I want to see Black Panther, and I want to see Spider-Man, but I've still probably, sorry, Karen, never going to watch all of the Iron Mans. So, like, you know, it's just, it's not there for me. But I still, and I messaged Karen after, and I messaged Nat after, like, I felt Tony Stark's storyline so much in Civil War, and I hadn't seen pretty much anything for Iron Man. But it's there. It's in the movie. I'm not missing anything because I didn't see anything else.
If you've seen the Iron Man movies, you might have felt it less, to be honest.
Hey, hey. Maybe not.
No. All I'm saying is that if you'd seen the arc, you might have felt less sympathy for Tony, because Civil War on its own, it seems like he deserves the sympathy, but he definitely dug himself into a few holes that kind of make him not so sympathetic before now. That means that what he's doing here looks pretty bad. But anyway, carry on. And
anyway, there is another part of this article that makes me even madder than this, like, you know, gated fan community that we've kind of been touching upon. And it not even makes me mad, but, like, makes me think about one thing and then makes me angry for another reason. So the second to last paragraph says, the sequel grind can wear down goodwill among fans too. I'd only ever call myself fanatic about one franchise, the X-Files, and its much hyped return last year only reminded me of the original series' glaring faults. That line is the, like, it just makes me think of the sequel culture that is different from what this expansion culture is, that I think that this writer has the main problem with. I think the sequel and revival culture is something completely different. Like replace X-Files with Gilmore Girls. And that sentence is so true for me as well. But then she goes on to say, jumping back into expansion as opposed to, like, sequel with Fantastic Beasts, saying, like, about her friend, because clearly this writer can't be associated with Harry Potter. So she says that her friend finds herself rolling her eyes anytime she sees Fantastic Beasts news. Harry, Ron, and Hermione already defeated Voldemort, the greatest threat the universe has ever seen. Why in the world would she care about some nobody like Beasts in the world? Okay,
oh my God, first of all,
Johnny Depp casting aside, Grindelwald is a story I actually do care about and want to know about, this great battle between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, because it's
crucial to the actual the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, like I'm more into that, like, than anything at the moment. Like, what Okay. Yes, I too am rolling my eyes at Fantastic Beast news, but it's mainly because Johnny Depp was cast in the movie.
Like, really?
Yeah, you know just, what I mean? Like,
oh, it's so.
Like,
why?
That paragraph is so problematic because I think it's touching on two very different things. One, you don't understand Harry Potter, so don't put it in there. And two, like, you're talking about something completely separate from the rest of your argument with, like, yes, it is a pop culture moment and these sequels do tie in, but it's something completely different than I think Marvel and what Harry Potter's doing. It's so far removed from that.
Yeah, and I think it's very like it's very similar to sort of the point that we made before about this like idea of what a fan has to be, like this formative, definitive idea of you're only a fan of this, you know, thing if you have done all these other things as well, you know, like you're only a fan of the Marvel Universe if you've seen every single movie 5 times, you know, like that's not it. And Brittany, I think it was you, I remember a few episodes ago you said about Gilmore Girls how you wanted to cut yourself off from the rest of the fans. Was that you? Because it was so important to you that
I wanted to watch it again, like we're talking about, like creating that like echo chamber that Nat was saying, like I don't want the fan reaction before I see it. I want to see it. And just like, you know, when I watched Gilmore Girls, it was like in my room on DVD or like, you know, by myself. I wasn't on the internet because I was too young. Like there wasn't, besides like the main like network site where you can go and like see episode stills. Like that was it. That was the most internet exposure I had in my first viewing. So I didn't want it. Like I wanted it, the same thing is going to happen with Will and Grace. I like just might quit.
Yes,
the internet.
That's what I was going to get to. Yeah. 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 I'm the same. Like that's what I was saying. Like I used to be really like in my head about, oh, I'm only a fan if I've done this. But now that all of this Harry Potter new stuff has come out and I'm very conflicted with, you know, all the stuff J.K. Rowling is saying about some of the characters, I've now found myself content with not having to know everything that she has said because I don't necessarily agree with it. And I'm going to just stick with the books and the movies and, you know, everything prior to her new experiences with Twitter. But I'm the same with Will and Grace, Brittany. Like, I'm going to watch the new season. I'm going to, you know, probably enjoy it. Like, I don't think I'm going to dislike it by any means. But if it's not what I expect it to be or not what I necessarily agree with, I'm not going to, like, automatically sort of cut off the rest of the series. I'm just going to put it aside. Like, that happened, and I'm still going to consider myself to be a big fan and still enjoy the show, you know what I mean?
Watching the weirdest thing to me is that growing up I was the only person I knew who watched Will and Grace. Mm-hmm. Like the only person, no one at school watched it. Like it was very much mine, and I lived in like this isolated, like in my head at least, this isolated little bubble. And then, you know, you start to see like people tweeting when there's a marathon on TV, and I'm like, oh, other people like actually sit down and watch this as much as I do, and other people watched this growing up, and oh my god, how come everybody is so excited that they're reuniting? These are I'm the only person who knows these four characters. Like no one else is allowed to know them. And I felt that possessiveness, which is I don't want everyone's opinion at once. I don't care. Like, I want to go back and watch this in, like, 2000 and let it happen and then come back, you know?
It's, yeah. This is, like, such a tangent. But, like, Brittany, do we know if, like, the season's going to be, like, in the middle of – okay, this is spoilers, so if you don't want to know the spoilers for Will and Grace, just shut off. if this new season's going to take place within that gap where they're not talking, because technically in the timeline,
they're not talking. And like their kids are like 7 right now.
So
it's so weird.
Yeah, weird. Unless they like do it like right after, but then again, though, they don't all look that old. So
yeah, no, I think what they're going to do is like, well, this is just what I think. I think they're going to like open the episode and be like, are we supposed to be fighting about something? And then just carry on. Like, you know, I interviewed James Burrows, which like, I'm surprised I didn't cry through the whole thing. And this was a while ago, like when he was being honored by NBC. And everyone was like asking him about like directing in general and stuff. And I got to my question and I'm like, nope, it's only about Will and Grace. I have nothing else to ask you. So he was like, you know, he mentioned that Will and Grace is and probably will be his favorite project because it was so like fantastical. Like it wasn't set it was in its own world. So like you can get away with pretty much anything on that show. And I think that line like really ties into how they're going to just wipe the slate clean and start over. Like, you know, if Jack can get married to Kevin Bacon in a fantasy sequence, then I think that we'll be fine with them just being like, oh, we're totally not fighting anymore. And I'll be like, all right, that's cool. That's cool.
Usually I would agree, like, with, you know, the rules that they set up within the universe and whatnot, like that's very community. Like they've had like anything goes within that show. But like with Will and Grace, I agree. Like it is very much similar to sort of you can get away with most things, but when there's like a major plot point where the two main characters who have been best friends for 10 years, like you think that like you would address that in a better way, but yeah. I know that was a tangent. Sorry, everyone.
It's a good tangent because I want to segue into mine and it's to do with that possessiveness. I was going to like rip the last paragraph of this Hollywood Reporter article to bits because it's just...
Yeah, I want to say one more thing before we move on.
Yeah.
Well, kind of two things. The first is just the beginning of this first line in the last paragraph where she says the geeks have inherited the earth. Like... Ugh. That's really problematic, so okay?
Dismissive.
It is. Yeah. And, like, that's a good thing because we discuss things. I mean, this is literally what the last hour and a half has been about. We discuss things on a deep level, and it's always about this knowledge. And this line is just a perpetuation of the idea that, you know, also, being on that level is a bad thing.
It's also, yeah, that, and again, that's the long-form content as well. But this is bizarre because it seems really hypocritical or, like, not, like, it doesn't flow right because they say the geeks have inherited the earth with the maneuvering of the studios and together they've put up a wall between the corporate design fandoms and everyone else. What? Like what? Like, so, when they say the geeks, are they talking about the movie creators or are they talking about the audience? Because fandom isn't corporate designed if the geeks are the ones going because they want to. Like it's not like the corporation of Disney forced them to be this invested. Like it's more like these movies were well responded to because they were the level of investment that the audience wanted. Like this doesn't make sense. This is turning it on its head in a very stupid way. And it's just, again, the implication that being disinvested is a bad thing is insulting and ridiculous. But like, I don't know what this person thinks has gone on, but it's not this. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't, like, how do they think the geeks have maneuvered the studios? Like, what does that even mean?
By showing up at the theater? What do you want us to do?
Like, we've made something that people really like. Oh, like, that's like a boon for the studios because, okay, like, I've said this before, like, I have spoken to the writer of one of the Marvel films and I've said to him, like, oh my God, like, I love this, I love these characters so much, I wish that it could be, like, all kitchen sink drama, no action scenes, like, because I love the character work that you do. And he was literally like, same, because all writers, like there might be a few, but like no screenwriter really wants to screenwrite for action. Most people want to screenwrite for character. And so the reason, like, you know, it's, you know, sometimes the screenwriting in action movies is bad is because you know, it's not something that people are all that passionate about, like, or superhero movies are passionate about. So for them to make movies that have, you know, shades of really good character work in them, and for the audience to respond well to that, and for them to keep getting to do that, for them to keep getting to go, like, deeper with the aspects of their movies that aren't just the popcorn flick aspect, that's like a creative prize for the kind of writers that I know are making these films. So that's like, I don't understand how that's like a maneuver, if you know what I mean. Like, it's more like, holy crap, like, we can actually do this. Again, Logan is one of the biggest examples. We can do this. We can actually make a film of this level in this genre because we know that the audience is this engaged and that they don't want the simple, that they want this kind of continuation. So, yeah, I don't know. It's totally nuts.
The last thing I wanted to say was that at the bottom of this article, full circle moment, it says, Inku Kang is a film and television critic, most recently at MTV News. Clearly, you know, finding other places to write. But I wanted to say, like, even though I disagree heatedly with this article, like, thank you for writing it, because this is the kind of stuff that we want to continue seeing so we can continue having discussions about it. And without that, you know.
Yeah. And also, we kept saying, like, we worked our way through the article. It's not too long. We were like, no. Now, the second to last paragraph, and, like, you know, it's not hard for us to engage with this. People, give us more of this, even if we disagree with it, because then we'll go and we'll write a long form essay about why we disagree with it.
Yeah, which I actually might do.
Do it. Save the craft.
Yeah. My gripe of the week, and it's not a current gripe, it's an ongoing problem. It's tied to what Brittany mentioned about her level of possession and her level of, I am the only person in the world that knows that these four characters exist.
Segue tonight. Like, everything is just flowed on very well.
I know. That's what makes us good. That's why we're good. So that aspect, a big part of how I feel about The Raven Cycle, which is my favorite book series in the world. And it takes a lot for me to actually sit here and say that, because I have a lot of trouble validating my care for stuff. I usually weigh it up in, oh, I haven't known this thing for long enough, so am I just hyped about it right now? Like, is it gonna, like, stay the distance, if you know what I mean? Like, is this going to be, like, am I gonna feel the same way about this in 10 years? Am I gonna hang on to it? Or is it just something that I'm, like, obsessed with it right at the second? I can say very, very confidently that this is my favorite series that I've ever read. And that surpasses Harry Potter, that surpasses, like, a lot of other book series that, like, have been huge for me. And the influence that Harry Potter has had on my life for various reasons is still the biggest influence, because it was something so shared. The Raven Cycle is the opposite. The Raven Cycle is the first book series since I was a kid that I have been this possessive about, that I have been this paranoid about, and that it has belonged to me so deeply. The first one that I had that with was The World of Tamora Pierce, which I've spoken about a few times, in that I was the only person I knew who knew it, that it was actually not even in print at the time when I was first reading it, because it was given to me by someone else. And there was a few years where it was out of print in the 90s. And so it was mine. It was mine. And it was the first thing that I ever engaged with on that level of fiction where I knew everything about the universe. I started looking stuff up about it on the internet a little bit, like only like in, when I became a teenager, but I started reading it from when I was like seven. And it was mine, like, in a way that nothing ever has been or probably ever will be, to be honest. I got that when I read The Raven Cycle 2 years ago for the first time, and that I was just like, I am nearly 30. What the fuck is happening to me? I love sharing my experiences with people. I love recommending things to people. I love finding people to talk to. But it came back with this fierce passion and hatred and paranoia and all of these kind of things. Not hatred, but like this very much, I came into this world. It felt like it had been mine forever. It felt like these were people I had known forever that were waiting for me, and I did not want to engage with people about it at all. I still don't. And the only people I want to talk to about it are the people that I have specifically invited to read it. One of them is on this call right now. People I've specifically invited to read it and who I have made text me along while they are reading it to see how they react. I have also had some conversations with people who had read it without my input, like people who I met only through that fandom. If someone I happen to know happened to randomly read it without, like, you know, because I don't know, say someone listened to this podcast right now and heard me talking about it, and they were like, oh, Natalie was talking about it. She read the, oh, that sounds really interesting. I'd like to go and read that. And they read it. Okay, go and do it. Please don't talk to me about it. I'm, like, fully serious. I can't handle having public conversations about it, basically. I can only have these very private one-on-one conversations about it. It's very, I don't know why. It's very weird and childish and terrible, but I can't handle it. The point is, it was very recently announced a few weeks ago that they are making a, or that it's been optioned for a television show they actually attached a guy called Andrew Miller, I think, as showrunner. And there was like a script writer that had some significance as well. And I think Catherine Hardwick was attached to direct the first episode. And it's still in pre-production. Like, it's not like it's not like fully in the works and casting and stuff like that. But this show is either going to be the best or the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Because, number one, the fandom for the show is getting bigger. Fandom for the books is getting bigger regardless. People are getting really, really into them, especially on Tumblr. It has canonical queer relationship in it that starts with a character that you assume is heterosexual, so that's like a big deal for a lot of people. And it has, it's they're just beautiful, like they're perfect. I love them. Like, I would recommend them if I wanted to talk to people about it, because they are, to me, some of the most intricate, perfect writing and most realistic portrayal of people. So many aspects of it. This TV show, if it is not perfect, is going to be the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Because, number one, it's a lot of public attention where people are going to be talking about the, you know, the property, and everyone's going to know what it is. Like, you know, whether it's like a, you know, something like, you know, Shadowhunters or whatever, that, you know, like the book series becomes more well-known, or, you know, book series, the television version, like, kind of takes over the identity of what people know of the property. And there's so many aspects of it that could go wrong. There's so many aspects of it that might not come across right, because so much of it, like, it's internal, like, it's all third-person narration, and it's not first-person narration, it's third-person, so you get a lot of inner memories that color the experience that someone's having that you can't really show that well on film. And there's just, and the casting as well, there's a whole minefield casting, including race-related stuff, which is kind of like a fandom drama, which I don't really want to get into because it's not why I'm talking about this today. But there is, like, very sensitive, basically, there are characters in the book that are white who fandom want to be of color, but it is kind of problematic that they want these certain characters to be of color, because it perpetuates kind of a negative stereotype, and it's a very, very sensitive issue where people, like, seem to be, like, kind of, like, their intentions are good, but they are kind of, it's kind of looks kind of dodgy from afar. I have spoken about this on Twitter
racist
before. So
it's very, like, racist. Does that mean to be racist necessarily?
Yeah, it is well-intentioned. I am trying to say that, yeah. And it's been spoken about before. It's been spoken about before, even by the author. She's been like, I've seen, like, your race-bending fan casts, even before the television show came out, like, even when people were just doing fan art. And she's like, I'm fine. Like, she was like, I am not opposed to this, but I wish that people would do the whole group as race-bent, because when you race-bend just this one guy who is, like, the skinhead who gets into fights, who gets called the dog of the rich privileged guy, and you race bend him as black against the white privileged lead, that looks kind of really bad. Like, if you know what I mean. Anyway, that's not the reason that I'm bothered about the television show, though it is going to be really volatile. Whatever happens with the casting, there are already people threatening to boycott if certain characters are not cast as certain races. Like, who? Like, if this character is not cast as black, for example. And I don't know which way they're going to go. I don't know if they are going, because it sounds so stupid to be against, like, diversifying characters. There are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of examples where I love when that's done. This one, there are reasons why it would not be good, or why it would be possibly incredibly problematic. And there's a lot of young white girls on Tumblr who plan to boycott the show if it doesn't go that way. So I don't know. It's very confusing. The point is, I love this so much that I want no one to ever talk about it. Not because I don't want people to know about it, but just because I can't handle hearing about it outside of my own head and conversations. And so the show, if it is perfect and if the cinematography and the casting and the heart and the soul of it are right, I will love it so much. And it will also, like, take over my brain, because I will need to write everything about it. I will need to be there, like, I'll need to be so involved. But if it's not good, or if it's not true to the book, even if it was objectively good, like, but it's not the book, I will just die. Like, I will just, it'll be probably like one of the worst fandom experiences, if not the worst, that has ever happened to me. And I'm being like a really big, childish, petty baby, but I can't handle it, and I don't know how to go about handling it, basically. So that's my current worry in the pop culture world. And Jack is one of the people that I personally invited to read The Raven Cycle so that I'd have someone to talk to.
I'll, like, never, ever forget that night. Hey, I remember, like, getting a few messages from you, and you were just, like, kind of subtly surveying me, just, you know, asking me a few questions. I didn't quite know, you know, what it was about. And then you're just like, okay, here's this set of books. But you were, like, testing me. You were, like, putting me through the ringer first.
I don't remember what I said exactly. This sounds so bad. I'm not a gatekeeper. I'm usually really not. It's not like I don't want people to read them. I just don't want them to talk to me. I just don't want to hear about it. Yeah.
Very valuable that you invited me in your collection of people who were allowed to read it. No, I love this series very much. I'm certainly not as massive as a fan of Natalie as Natalie is. I will be very concerned, mainly with the whole race bending thing, like you said, Natalie, if how sort of influential the fans are for that aspect of the show. But I think that, like, what I'll say is very much like a common theme I've been talking about all night, is that, like, lately I've had the ability to really disengage and separate myself from fandom and just appreciate the content how I want to experience it. You know, like, if this show is awful and just god awful, that won't necessarily, and this is different to Natalie because I know how much of a personal connection you have to this series, more so than I do, but if the show is bad, it won't really ruin my experiences or how I want, or how I have, you know, enjoyed the books, you know. So I obviously would not want this show to be awful, but I'm not going to sort of hold, like, so much value to the show in terms of, like, the whole series and how I'll enjoy it, you know. But I understand that this series in particular has such a, like, one of the most intense, like, almost as much as Drag Race, but, like, almost like the most intense group of people who, like, read it and, you know, take it apart and stuff, that I can understand there is going to be so much, like, writing on how they do this TV adaptation. And I just hope, I don't know, I haven't read much about, like, the production and
there's
whatnot.
There's not Maggie, much out there.
Okay, well, I really hope that Maggie is, like, you know, very, very involved in the process, because I think that's really going to be a huge make and break thing with this show.
Yeah. The, again, like what you were saying about Drag Race, the people who are negative about this series because something didn't go the way they wanted it to, there's, like, a subsect of this fandom that really loved a particular character that turned out to be a pretty unapologetic villain, and who was not forgiven by the text, who and they make a lot of noise, and that's kind of trickled down to some other stuff as well. there's a lot of real person hate towards the author from certain subsects of the fandom as well. So I don't know. It's like there's just so much here that it's going to be a, like, horrible fandom if it does become a television show. Like, it's going to be...
It's been confirmed, though, right?
Such a bad vibe, and I'm just... I don't know. I just need the actual content of the show to be perfect if it's happening, or for it not to exist. Like, if it got cancelled now, I wouldn't be mad about it, like, at all. I'd be like, okay, I'll be like, probably fine with that.
Do we know anything? Like, do we know, like, companies going to be with, or like a date, or like a general time frame? Do we know anything, or is it just like it's been
greenlit? I know the showrunner Andrew Miller, who wrote for Secret Circle, but who's never been a showrunner, but who's apparently attached to the Tremors remake, Karen, as well.
Well, she's a good egg then.
It's a guy, but yeah. And then Catherine Hardwick attached to direct the pilot. No network, so it might literally have to be shopped around. Like, it literally might not get off the ground. Like, I don't know. But the point is, I don't know how to handle myself in this circumstance, and I don't know how to handle, like, my possessiveness of these series. And, you know, I've sort of been combating this kind of behavior for a very long time, and am very much at the point where I do prefer to share things, but I'm so possessive of this, and I don't know why. Yeah, so possessive that I don't want the TV series, but also because I don't want it to go wrong. Like, I just couldn't bear seeing it go wrong. So I don't know, man. I don't know how to handle that. Has anyone had a terrible book to screen adaptation of something they love before?
I mean, I was never, like, a major fan of The Hunger Games. I liked the books, like, a lot, and I read them all way before the movies came out. But, like, I hate the movies. Like, especially the first movie, I think it's just, like, god-awful in terms of, like, what was actually presented in the book. And Katniss's portrayal in the movies is just, like, so, so off to me. But, yeah.
I mean, you've seen the Golden Compass adaptation.
Oh, well, we're not talking about that. But that flopped so badly that everyone was just like, yeah, that didn't happen. Like,
it's so bad.
Well, the BBC hopefully are doing it right. So
yeah. The first Shadowhunters adaptation was so god awful. Oh my god, the TV series is like so much better.
Guys, stop listing movies that I like.
You did not like The Golden Compass.
We've had this discussion before.
Karen, I can't, like, you, Leo won't let you stay in the hotel room. Like, oh, Karen, have you read the series?
I have.
Are you aware that it, like, the end point of the movie is not the end point of the book, and it misses, like, the crucial point of the book, which is that he kills the kid?
I read this books after I saw the movie, which is probably why I like the movie to begin with.
Oh dear. Anyway,
No one has said Avatar. No one has said Avatar as a movie.
It doesn't exist, Jack. It doesn't exist.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's so bad.
And I do actually hate that one. So yay me.
Karen, do you like the Super Mario Brothers movie? I bet you do.
Oh my god, this is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I haven't seen it. I just know it's, like, really hated by everyone.
Oh, but it's so great.
I want to watch it just to enjoy how bad it'll probably be.
You should message me if you do that.
Okay, I will.
Anyway, point is, I don't know how to handle myself and this happening. I feel like I'm going to fall down, like, a rabbit hole of crazy if it does start happening. Because, like, I always said this, like, about the Tamora Pierce books. I was like, if they ever, like, make a movie of them or anything like that, like, I need to work on the production. Like, the only way I'm going to accept this existing is that if I am, like, literally involved. Not that that's my career at all, but, like, I was just like, I can't handle it. Like, and so this is kind of like, I will be so, like, I apologize in advance to what I will be like about this show, like, if it happens. happens because it's not going to be good. It's going to be really very, very, very bad for me, whatever goes down. It will either be good and I will never, ever, ever get over how good it is and stop talking about it, or it will be bad and it will ruin my life. And so, yeah, I don't know what to do. Anyway.
So should we super speedily run through why we're excited about things?
Yes, because, okay, so that's flip side. Can I go first? Because mine ties in because it's so hypocritical of what I just said. My Height is another book-to-screen adaptation which came out last year called Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, which I don't know if I've ever mentioned on this show before, but was basically my favorite preview that we saw at San Diego Comic-Con last year, but I was already interested in it because the lead who plays Dirk Gently is an English guy called Sam Barnett, who's an actor who I have followed his entire career because he was one of the leads in The History Boys, which is, as I've spoken about many times, my favorite medium. So Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency was a book series by Douglas Adams, and who also wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And this is a different series, basically about a guy who is kind of a psychic detective who refuses to admit he's a psychic. He's kind of a bit naive and oblivious about it. But the television series that has just come out, which is show run by Max Landis, it is not the book. I have not read the books, but I know for a fact that it is not an adaptation of what happens in the book. It is the vague theme of Dirk Gently, like the character, in a completely not even in any close way related to the story. It is just a story that uses this character. And objectively, as a show, it is one of the best things I've ever seen. It is so insane, so fast-moving, so funny. The acting is brilliant from everyone. It's on BBC America, which I believe is that like a premium cable-level channel in the States? Or, like, what does that count as there?
Yeah, given to you.
It has that element of those long episodes that don't hit ad breaks in the same way, if you know what I mean. And that, again, it's just very, very fast and it doesn't hand feed you and it is so insane. But I love everything about it, like totally, totally loved it. Favorite show of last year by far. And they've just put it on BBC America for free today. Like it's already on Netflix, but it's available right now. All 8 episodes, it's a short series, are available to watch for free on BBC America website. So that's why I'm hyping it today, basically, because you can go and watch it. And I just love it so much. It's going to be in Hall H at Comic-Con this year, right after Doctor Who, which is just insane. Like, me seeing Sam Barnett in Hall H, I might, like, cry because, yeah, it's so weird. But I don't know. It's such a fantastic series. To me, objectively, but like if you were like a diehard Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency book fan, you would probably like hate this so much and want to die the same way I want to die about the Raven Cycle. And so I feel a little bit hypocritical and terrible, but I suppose we all have our stuff. But Dirk Gently, it stars, as I said, Sam as Dirk, and his foil is a guy called Todd Brodsman, who is just this hotel clerk who gets caught up in the mystery that Dirk's involved with, and he's played by Elijah Wood. And, oh, my God, this pair of actors, I have very rarely seen anything like their chemistry for comedy together. It is so good, and I thought I had seen Sam Barnett's chemistry with another actor peak because he is best friends with our good friend that we've talked about several times on this show, Jamie Parker, who was the Harry Potter of Cursed Child and who was also in The History Boys and who has also been in another stage show with him, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Sam and him did that show together as well. they are fantastic actors together. They are a perfect pair because they know each other so well and so deeply that they act perfectly together. And I love them together and I want to see them together and everything. I never thought I could see Sam with someone better for him as an actor with than Jamie. But Elijah comes very close and it is a very different thing and it is so funny and it's so great. And it has these amazing female characters as well that are like not really like any girl characters I've seen on TV in a while. And there's actually quite a few characters on like the premium cable shows, like Laura on American Gods, Tulip in Preacher, and all three of the lead women in Dirk Gently, who are, they're just not the kind of women that I see in network television shows in the way that they're allowed to act. And I don't know what that divide is. I don't know like what makes that kind of like storytelling that these women are allowed to exist, but they're amazing. So have any of you guys seen it?
No, I have not.
None of you? That's okay. I didn't think you had. That's all right. You, Karen, I think you will love it a lot.
Yeah.
It is weird as hell. Like it has supernatural elements to it. Like it's not just like a detective. It's not just like a procedural. It is a mystical, supernaturally kind of, not supernatural, but like weird kind of show. But the humor and the action and the mindfuckery is so funny and so good and so clever. And I just think it is one of the best shows I've ever seen. It's probably not for everyone and you really have to pay attention. I like it because it doesn't, again, it doesn't pander. It doesn't wait for you to catch up. You have to actually engage. And there's a lot that you'll be like, oh, holy shit. Like if you don't catch it the first time, you'll watch it again and be like, oh, my God, they planted that and all this stuff. But it's genius. Max Landis, the creator, is kind of insane in that he writes, like, these huge volumes. Like, he writes it all himself and he's very, very young and he writes, like, these massive body of work. Apparently he can write, like 20,000 words a day or something weird. I read an article. So he's like, a crazy, yeah, creator type. Person who he's very outgoing and sort of present on the internet, but I love this show. I would recommend it to anyone who likes anything a bit weird and funny and special, but it's just ironic that I love this so much. And it is what is considered to be a very unfaithful book adaptation. And that is also my greatest fear at the moment. So I am totally happy to share this one with the world, though, even though it's kind of weird for me that people know who Sam is, because for so long he was someone who I fangirled in a way that was inappropriate for his level of fame. Like he was like a small character actor in the UK who was like not on the street famous, but I was like way too into him as a fan. Like I would be super, I was very, very starstruck by him the first time I met him. And so that is very rare for me, as some of you may know. So I don't know. Dirk Gently, go and watch it on BBC America or Netflix if you have it. I love it. Everyone should love it. It's fucking crazy. But yeah, I love it and I'm a hypocrite. Sorry. I have no better way to describe it, really. Like I can't even like think how to describe the plot. Except that Dirk is a detective trying to solve a mystery of a murder. He's very unconventional and there are a lot of really, really, really weird twists. The main theme of it is everything is connected. Like that's the buzzword of the show. And I'll just say, keep that in mind when you watch the show. It's basically about looking for the incidental things that might not be incidental, but yeah, you'll see. Go and watch it, especially Karen. Okay. Who wants to go next?
Well, we were talking about Hall H, so maybe Karen could talk about Comic-Con.
Yes, so my hype this week is going to be San Diego Comic-Con, just because it's coming up here soon. And it's always a really stressful week, but also a really satisfying one. And I love San Diego because it was one of the first things that helped me start getting over my anxiety, believe it or not. I wanted to go so badly that even though I was terrified of traveling by myself and being around huge groups of people and meeting a lot of people at Hype Bowl that I had never met before, I wanted it so badly that I just decided to do it. And it ended up being really fun and a really great experience. And I've been going back 4 or 5 times now. And it's just a couple weeks away. Natalie, I did buy my plane tickets. So I usually do it like the week beforehand. So I'm really proud that I did it.
Don't
like,
the prices go up?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just really
you're like, yeah.
But it's always a lot of fun, not only because of the fandom stuff and because I really like walking the show floor and looking at all of the stuff that's out there, the art and the merch, but I get to see people like Natalie, who I only get to see a couple of times a year, and it's always a lot of fun to meet up with the other Hypeable people and hang out with them for a little while.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. I'm a little anxious, but, you know, not quite as anxious as I was last year. Yeah, I am still kind of getting my head around leaving the country because I have a ton to prep for before I come at work. And so, I don't know, it's gonna be, hopefully it's gonna be good. I hope it's gonna be good and not horribly stressful while it's happening. I need to work on my short form writing in order for that to happen, basically, instead of trying to publish articles that are over 2,000 words while on the run. But I am keen. Is there something in particular you're looking forward to this year, what's being presented?
That's the weird part for me is that, like, yes, obviously I go to see panels and go to the press rooms and stuff because, you know, we get a chance to do that. But, like, panels are my least favorite part about Comic-Con. I know.
Why do you keep saying this? And I keep getting this, like, I went to a Supernatural con recently and I'm like, people are, like, way more keen for, like, the photo ops than the panels. I'm like, no, I would take all panels, like, all day, all panels, different mixes of people, different topics. Like, I love panels, and they are number one priority.
It just stresses me out. It has a lot to do with secondhand embarrassment. It has a lot to do with fan questions at the end. Oh. I like the actual content, but, like, stick me in a panel and show me the first episode of something, and I am super happy. But anything beyond that just really stresses me out.
Fan questions are my nightmare.
On
podcasts, when they're, like, live recorded, I stop listening. Oh, like, I'm just like, nope, I can stop.
Sometimes they're pretty bad. I don't know. I love them, though. I love panels. I love anything like that. Like, I just love talks. Like, I love people giving talks. So I don't know. But is there anything, any show or any film that you're keen on? What if they do a panel for Kingsman, Karen? Are you going to come with me to Kingsman?
Yes.
You're like, yeah.
Yes. Oh, and Magicians will be there. And I really love the Magicians. So
yeah,
I get to see that. Yeah.
Yes. So it's soon. We will hopefully be able to bring you some stuff from that when we get back as well. Some little highlights, and we'll probably actually record something together while we're there. So that should be good.
But more importantly is the week before Comic-Con when Natalie and I get to hang out and go see some Broadway shows. So it's fine. That's my Comic-Con. Yeah. Every year my Comic-Con is when Natalie comes to New York, either before or after Comic-Con.
Yeah. And we can also maybe make a recording. I was going to be like, we should do like a live from New York. This is Saturday night.
No, we should do our own Billy on the Street and just harass people.
Oh my god.
I can't watch those videos either.
Oh, I watch it. Do you know it's Brooke's like favorite show? Like she loves it so much. And I watched it the first time in full on television the other day because they were doing episodes on like what Viceland, which is like a channel here that buys a lot of that kind of stuff. And yeah, and I was just like, oh my god. And it was like they had like a cow that, and they were making Lena Dunham milk a cow. And I was just like, what is, like, I don't understand how they get away with this. But anyway, yes, Brittany, I was thinking to do one like about New York. Like if we've like literally like hype and gripe about New York. So we can literally harass.
It'll be great because we should just do I will gripe and you will hype. You hype New York and I will gripe New York because I don't like New York.
Well, and you like New York. If we could grab people on the street, then, you know, like, well, it would be like you would have a best thing about New York. Like, surely there's a best on a list of bad things. Anyway, well, it doesn't have to be specific to that, but that would definitely work for grabbing people on the street. Like,
yeah.
But, yeah, we have to decide what shows we're going to see and when you're going to come into the city and if we're going to enter lottery every day or not. So I will talk to you about that off the podcast, but that will also be a fun time. Yes.
I'm so jealous.
You could come too.
I have a dissertation to write.
I'm not coming. You got a long plane ride.
That's a good point.
I'm not coming to New York with you in 1 week. Like that's, yeah. it will be good. Yay. Lots of good things. I can't even really visualize Comic-Con at the moment. So I hope that it goes well. I'm excited to see our hotel room. It has two pools. It has a child-free pool. Apparently it has like a rooftop. It's like one of the big ones. So I'm excited for that. Okay. Jack, do you want to go next?
Yeah. No, my hype is not like a lot. It's just that Orange is the New Black season 5. I won't really spoil anything because I know that it's only just recently come out. I don't want to spoil anybody. But basically the show is amazing. It sort of harkens back a little bit to our previous conversation about possessiveness. I don't get, like, very possessive about the show. It's more so just talking to other people about it. Like, I don't necessarily enjoy because the characters, like, every single character in the show to me is just so rich and so has such a great history and are always, like, basically the show, like, really gives you a great insight into how complex people in general are, especially within specific circumstances and whatnot, and it does a really good job of showing, you know, flashbacks and current behavior and giving you sort of this juxtaposition between sort of their experiences and whatnot, and it does it in a really, really good way. And season 5 was really, really good for that, I think, especially, you know, what I said about being in a specific situation which might not be the norm and sort of seeing people's like decisions and how they behave within that, especially within sort of how the show has done a good job at developing these characters. And I think that season 5 was really good. I enjoyed it a lot, especially considering how season 4 was. Like, season 4 was very, very dramatic. A lot of stuff happened and it ended in a really shocking way. And I think season 5 really handled that sort of big ending and sort of the consequences for what had happened at the end of season 4. They handled it in season 5 in a really good way. And, yeah, I just love this show so much. And if people talk to me about it, I kind of just shut off because I don't want to hear their opinions. But, no, I really like it. And, yeah, do you guys watch the show at all? Have you seen season 5?
No.
I stopped after 3. I wasn't planning to stop. And then 4 came out and I didn't binge watch it. And I heard what happened. And I was kind of like, and then I didn't get to watch. I wasn't like having like a moral outrage standpoint exactly, but I didn't get the energy to watch it. So I'm not. And then I didn't realize that like a whole other season had already come out. Though I will say I am keen to get back into it because I have seen GIFs of Pablo Schreiber as Bornstash, as George Mendez coming back into it. And I'm curious about his story coming back in because he's currently my favorite in the entire world. So
I can give you like a quick fight.
Because of his role in American Gods. But yeah. What? Is it bad? Is it good?
Oh, it's neither. He's like in it for probably like 2 minutes and he probably says two words. Yeah, he's not like, I don't know if you want to watch like a 13 episode.
He's on an American Gods blog then, so okay, that's fine.
No, I think this show just does such a great job. It's so like, it can be so dramatic and touch on these like really important issues, but at the same time, it does such a good job at like mixing in the comedic elements without it taking away from how dramatic and intense like the situation is. It's really good. I love it so much.
Did you guys watch it? I can't remember.
No. Mm-mm. I've tried to watch the pilot like 9 times and fail every time.
Yeah, I watched the first few episodes of season 1 and it wasn't really my thing.
Is it because you can't get through the 2.5-hour Regina Spektor intro that plays and like eats away at like valuable minutes of my life every time?
You shut your mouth, Annalie. Regina Spektor is a gem, okay? And she makes amazing music, so I've had enough of that, okay?
That's not up for debate. The fact is that the opening credits for this show are so long that I feel like I've lost song. Hours of my life.
In I don't even think day. There are opening credits in the pilot.
Oh, maybe there's not.
I can't even get past. I don't know why.
It's probably because of Alex and Piper. Like, they are the worst. Like the worst characters in that show. Like especially Piper. And I think MasterChef season 1 is like very much about their story arc. But when it comes to like, you know, season 3, probably 2 to 3 onwards, it really like, you know, it really deviates from their storyline. So I don't know. I think I obviously think it's like worth it. I think that you would really enjoy watching all 5 seasons of these 13 episode hour long episodes. But it's really good.
Yeah. See, like that, and that's another commitment. Thing. Like I really do want to watch it because it's one of those shows where there is a lot of people who are saying like, you know, oh, if you just get through this, you could watch that. But there's so many shows where it's like, if you could just get through the first 30 hours, then I swear the last 4 will pay off. And I'm like, all right, it's on the list of shows where like, if I could just get through 13 episodes, then I'll really enjoy it. So it's on there.
I can understand that. Maybe, and I think like one of the best things about the show is that like, it obviously comes around the same. It comes around in June each year, Netflix. You can binge watch all 13 episodes. And I think that like, if you don't do that, you probably would be hard to get into because, like you said, there's just so much to watch. Mm-hmm. But if you just, like, sit down and watch it all when it comes out, enjoy it, you know, for what it is then, and then come back to it in a year's time when it comes out again and just, like, keep that cycle. And I think it's easier to sort of digest. But, yeah, it's amazing. And I always recommend watching it.
I am keen. I don't know how, like, I kind of wish that Netflix didn't binge drop stuff though, because I would prefer if they dropped it week to week, like, because I get a bit stressed about like for example with this, I heard like within 2 days like the ending of season 4 and I was like, oh, I don't have the energy to get through that, and then didn't catch up, if you know what I mean, whereas week to week it might have been different, like I would have already been invested and following along. So I know some shows drop their episodes week to week on Netflix. I kind of wish that did as well. So that's probably a different gripe anyway. I am keen. I am invested in the characters. My favorite is probably Nikki. But
oh, yes.
And Dyer, but.
Dyer, yes. sorry.
But, yeah. We will. I am keen to catch up at some point. So if you say that 5 was worth it, then I'll do it.
Well, I think 4 is definitely my most favorite season. And like, I know that you know the ending, really? But like the lead up for that whole like climax of that season is just like absolutely incredible. It's like 1,000% worth watching. It's really really good.
I will. And that's my height. And then are we just on Britney's now?
Yeah,
cool,
let's hear it.
My hype this week is a 4-letter word, b-a-b-y, baby.
Yes.
Oh my God. There was something. So when the trailer for Baby Driver came out, I was like, ugh, that looks so stupid. And then the trailer for Baby Driver kept playing for months and months and months. And I'm like, I really want to watch this movie. And then I realized that Edgar Wright was directing it. And I'm like, I really want to watch this movie. And I finally watched this movie last night. And holy cow, it was so good. Like within the first 3 minutes, you're like, yep, I'm in it. This is going to be the greatest movie ever. And it was like car chases and the music and Ansel. Oh my goodness. Everything about it. It was like the perfect, it was perfectly paced. It was just, it was unbelievable. I haven't had time to process it. I saw it about 13 hours ago. So it's
been 13 hours since I last saw Baby Driver.
Yeah, it's still, settling in my brain. And it was really good. It took everything I had not to like drive home at like 90 miles an hour. So, yeah.
That's Kristen and I saw it together and we blasted music on the way home. And she said the same thing. She's like, I have to make sure I don't drive too fast.
And I did. I sat in the parking lot trying to find the right song to drive home to. And I was so frustrated that there was nothing on.
I am so excited for this movie. I have not seen Baby Driver as of yet because I'm in Australia, which is a whole nother issue in that, like, release dates. Sometimes we get stuff like earlier than the US, but
2 months later.
Mainly it's heaps later. My other most anticipated movie right now is The Big Sick. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
It's not playing anywhere near me yet, so I have to wait.
I am desperate to see that. I actually might see it in New York, Brittany, so we should go. It's playing at a couple of places in Brooklyn. And it doesn't come out here till August 31st, if at all. But literally every person I have loved in the entire world on the internet who's seen it has said it's the best, like the best rom-com that they've ever seen. Basically, they're just loving it. And most of the people recommending it are also recommending Baby Driver. Basically, these are my two movies right now that I need. So I am such a massive Edgar Wright fan. I love everything he does. And this, full admission, I have not even seen the trailer for Baby Driver. I have not watched it because I just feel, I haven't had internet for 3 weeks and so nothing was loading on my phone when I was at home on my like cell reception. But I have not seen the trailer because I feel like I just want to be blasted by it. But I conceptually know what the film is. I know that it's like a massive passion project for him for 20 years. Or something like that, and that he, it is very, very, very music based. I saw articles saying that he's perfected the musical with this, and I'm like, I don't think it's a musical, but
I feel like the music
drives the story. Like, even if it's not being performed.
No, but like it is. The thing is like it performed is like it could be used very loosely. Like it, even like. The shot of a gun hits the music. It's on the screeching of the tires goes to the music. So it is very performative. So I think that it should, I agree with that statement, that it is a musical. It's very much like that.
The soundtrack for it, like a lot of reviews are calling it a musical, like lots and lots. So Edgar's movies always have soundtracks that are unbelievable, and this one he's gone all out for stuff that's like stuff that he loved that maybe people have never heard of but are like, oh my god, I love this now and stuff like that, and he is just pushing it so hard because he's so proud of it, which is cute. But
there was last night when I got home, there was like the top five. I'm afraid of Reddit mainly because I don't know how it works. So there was like a top five answers that, Edgar Wright gave to his Reddit AMA. And one of them was like the picking of the songs, and I'm not going to reveal any of the songs or anything, but he said that he was texting with James Gunn when he was creating the movie, because he's like, I don't want to have the same song as what's on Guardians.
As Guardians. Like,
So he was like asking him like, are you going to use this artist? And he's like, no. And like, are you going to use this artist? And then no. So, like, it was, I thought that was interesting. Because he's like, I don't want people to be like, oh, this is a Guardian song. Like, he wanted yeah. everyone to be like, this isn't Baby Driver.
I read a really good article with him recently that was promo for this. It was basically like his top 13 albums, like Desert Island Discs, which is really, 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 really good. And it mentions some of the stuff used in this, like the opening number and stuff like that. But I am seeing it on Wednesday. So I fly on Saturday. I'm seeing a preview screening of Baby Driver on Wednesday. Preview screening of Spider-Man on Thursday, or to stop preview, it's kind of like release night of Spider-Man on Thursday, so that I can see them both before I get to the States. Though I am missing the actual, Sydney is having a Baby Driver premiere that Edgar is coming to on the 12th of July while I'm already away. And those kind of events, like for an indie film in Sydney, I could have got into like that, like so easily. And I am a little bit sad about that. I have seen Edgar do a screening in Australia before, but I love him. I love everything he does. And this is kind of like going to be for me like a combination of like what I love about him and like the vibe that I got from it, from the footage I have seen. I saw like a music remix they did of the trailer. Is like very much like I'm kind of anticipating the same kind of like oomph that I got from Kingsman, but maybe with a little bit less of the like random hysterical comedy, but the same kind of hyperactivity. And I am so
I just
keen.
Like grinned the entire movie. Like I did not stop smiling the whole movie.
Yeah
I'm so keen. And I had no idea like how big it was going to be. Like it seems like since it's come out everyone's like, oh my god, which is awesome. But I had no idea like if it was going to be something people knew about or not, because like some of Edgar's films like are very like low-key British culture, and then some of them are big, so it's kind of I didn't know where this one was like standing. But if you follow him on social media, he's been pushing it for a long time. He's been posting every piece of fan art available for the past however many months, so I'm super keen. You guys can talk about it, Karen and Brittany. You can talk about it if you want to. By the time this comes out, I will have seen it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know, but you haven't seen it yet. So it's sort of like I don't want to go too crazy about it when you haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm. Mostly, you can say something if you want.
Mostly, I just like go see this movie. Kind of, it doesn't really matter what kind of movies you like, because it has a little bit of everything. It has a romance plot. It has a lot of action. The music is really great. It's very good character work. And
the casting is so good.
It is really good. And I was smiling the whole time too. And like, I'm a huge action junkie, as you guys know. And like the stuff in this movie and the fact that the music and the action was so well timed, just like I can't even begin to tell you how exciting that was for me. And I was hearing a lot of really good things about this movie. People were saying, oh my god, it's so good. And I was like, Baby Driver, what kind of name for a movie?
What the hell is a Baby Driver?
Yeah, it's so weird. And then I saw that like Ansel Elgort was in it. I was like, oh okay, like I know who that is. And I decided to watch the trailer. Instantaneously was like, I'm seeing this movie like opening night. I don't care, I need to see it right away. And it was everything I wanted it to be and even more. So
everybody needs
to go see it.
It took me a little longer, like I was saying earlier, to get into it. I was like, I don't know, like this doesn't, it, because it didn't, on the surface it is not the type of movie that I would ever just be like, yeah, I'm gonna go see that. It would be like, I'm going to catch the last 40 minutes of this on HBO and be like, all right, that was cool. I'll say that I saw it even though I didn't. And then for some reason, like I kept seeing the trailer and I'm like, what is it? And I really, really think it was the repetition of the, your name is Baby, B-A-B-Y, Baby. And I'm like, I can't get that line out of my head. So I have to see this movie just to hear that line on the big screen because it's really annoying me. But I was so, when the music starts, like in the first scene, the way that Ansel, it was like I was instantly sold. It was not what I was expecting at all. And I was like, oh my god, this is so different than what I thought I was coming to see, and it's so perfect.
Mm-hmm. It really, that opening scene really captivates you and just puts its hook right in you, and it doesn't let go. And you were talking about the pacing before, like the movie just moves along at this great pace where you do get a lot of action stuff, which is exciting for me, but then it kind of pauses and there are these quiet moments between characters, and it just, it works so well and it balances itself out so well that it's just a really enjoyable. We walked out of the movie theater and I was like, I need to see that again as soon as possible. And I haven't yet. And it's kind of like, all right, when am I going to get my next Baby Driver fix?
Yeah. And I was going to see it on Friday night when I was driving up to Massachusetts, but I got stuck in traffic and it was too late and we had to record Rewatchable. God, you guys are so inconvenient. And then I got home actually kind of later than I was anticipating yesterday from Massachusetts. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't think I'm going to have time to see it. But then if I didn't go see it last night, when would I see it? Because I'm pretty busy the rest of the weekend. And I'm like, and I kind of said that I really want to talk about it on this. And I'm so glad I like dragged myself back out of the house after being in the car all day yesterday, because it was so worth it.
I've heard a lot of people saying that it's like, especially in cinemas, you know, in populated areas, that like full screenings, that it's really like people are getting really rowdy in the cinema, really reactionary and stuff like that. Did you guys have any of that?
No, it was pretty mellow.
Mm-hmm. I've just seen people saying that, and also just even saying that it's the kind of film that makes them feel like they want to go to the cinema with an audience, you know, as opposed to just like watching in your home in the way that sort of things have developed in recent years. That it's a very good cinema.
So.
You don't like what?
I don't like people who react out loud. So I was fine with her being quiet.
Don't watch a movie with me then.
I know. I was going to say, I know Karen does, and we've never watched anything together. And I think to save our friendship, we might never watch. No, that's a lie. Karen had the best out loud reaction I've ever experienced in a live environment.
Oh, God.
And that was
Hamilton.
Diffy Diggs was rapping in Hamilton, and Karen was just so in awe that it just made my life so much better. And anytime I listen to the soundtrack, I'm like, oh my God, this is where Karen freaked out.
This is the line where Karen just groaned because she was so in love.
Was it, which line was it?
It was in Act Two during the, it was right after the dissidents, like where he's going through that line.
And I couldn't like keep the sound.
Washington on your side.
Keep the sound inside of me. It was really embarrassing.
Yeah, that line, she was just like, oh, I'm like, Karen, are you okay?
Well, if you come to New York, Karen, next week, we can all go and see Baby Driver.
Oh, don't tempt me.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so I hope that everyone sees that, and I hope to be on here hyping about The Big Sick sometime soon as well, because I think that's a very different type of movie, but it's like equally most recommended by everyone whose opinion I give a shit about at the moment. But it's super not wide release, and I really want to see that as well. So
that's really frustrating, because I'm like, I'm not paying money to go into New York to then pay money to go see a movie.
Well, perhaps if you pay money to come into New York to see me, we could go and see a movie. But we could also go and see a show, which is a bit more time specific.
Yeah.
Okay. So we will finish off with our usual segments now, if that's a thing we want to do. Brittany, I'm going to task you right now with writing a quick haiku about what we've talked about while we do Two Truths and a Lie with Jack.
All right, on it.
Cool. So we've got Two Truths and a Lie, and we've got our question of the day as well. So Two Truths and a Lie is Jack's going to tell them to us this week, and we're going to guess about him. So what are your three statements, Jack, that are all allegedly true?
Okay. So these are all quite lame, and I hope that I have done a good job at tricking you guys. Okay. So here we go. First one. I think that honey is very overrated. In 2015, when I attended the Fleetwood Mac concert here in Perth, I walked past Christy McVie outside of the arena, which Christy McVie is in the band. And also, my last statement is, I get anxious when I watch The Simpsons.
Those are so random.
They're not very, related, are they?
No, they don't have to be related. They're just so weird. Honey is overrated. Like, honey like the food.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Karen?
I'm going to go with the middle one just because that seems like the most normal. So, like, the other ones are weird, so I feel like they've got to be true.
I suppose that's true. Elaborate on the Simpsons anxiety.
Okay, so when, like, I was younger, Mum really, really disliked the show, like, a lot. And, like, so now, like, when I watch – and so I was never allowed to watch it. And so, like, now as a 21-year-old, like, when I go and watch the show, it just, like, gives me complete anxiety because I feel like I shouldn't be watching it, you know?
Yeah, okay, I understand and I believe. All right, I guess – I like, so you still have, oh, my God, this is something I'm not meant to be doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair. And the honey, okay, I'm gonna go with Christy McVie as well, because that's the other ones are too weird, Jack. Like, they're too honeys, unless it's the opposite, unless you think honey is really underrated and you think that, like, honey is the best thing ever and that people don't talk about honey enough. So okay, I'll go with the middle one as well. Maybe it was, I don't know, another band member.
Which one was the middle one? Because I read them, like, in a different order from my page.
The Fleetwood Mac.
Okay, so that's three for Fleetwood Mac.
Oh no, yes. I didn't pick one. I was writing a haiku. I'm gonna go with honey.
Okay. So I did not run into Christy McVie after Fleetwood Mac contest. So that is a lie. You guys, you know, two out of three. Yeah, no, if you know, that happened, I would not be on this earth right now. I would have died and gone to heaven. My God. But no, I think honey is very overrated. Like, everybody always talks about honey, and I'm just like, it's too sweet, and it just does not do anything for me. So honey is not something I care for.
A natural antiseptic. If you've ever got a sore throat or a cut, you can put honey on it.
I've had tonsillitis for the past, like, week, and I have refused to have honey in my tea.
Don't have any tea. Have half a teaspoon on its own.
That's worse.
Also, I will say this. Australian honey has kind of a different flavour to it than some other honeys, because of the kind of flowers that the bees use here. I have had a couple of American honeys, like Tupelo honey and a couple of other honeys that, like, it's still like honey. It's still honey in the way that all chocolate is chocolate, but it tastes like it goes down really different. So I don't know. And that's the one I eat when I'm sick, because I don't like normal honey that much either. So
maybe you should import.
I don't think the honey necessarily tastes bad. Like, I think honey is, like, it is what it is, but I just think that it's overrated. So I'm not using it to cure my tonsillitis out of principle.
I would rather be sick than eat honey.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, okay, you're a real serious honey hater. That's sad for the bees. They need us to eat honey for them to live.
Oh, that'll be fine.
Oh, I don't know. They're dying, Jack. They're dying. So, all right. Our question of the day, ask NATWP anything, hashtag ANA, is from Twitter. It's from at LeahTA11. I'm not sure what that stands for, but it's Leah. And she's asked, do you have any or plan to get any fandom tattoos? I'm currently planning one. She hasn't said what it is, so you can tell us if you like, Leah. But do you guys have any tattoos currently? I think I know that a couple of you don't, and I think I know that Jack might have one, but I don't know what it's related to.
Yeah, I have two tattoos. Not one of them. I suppose one of them is sort of fandom related. It's just the title of a song that I really enjoy and that's quite personal to me. But I am planning on getting a few more tattoos at some point. Like, I think I'm gonna, like, section off maybe, like, a part of my back shoulder, and sort of use that space of my, like, to get symbols from fandoms, like Deathly Hallows and like little Pokemon Ball and like a Zelda Triforce, like all in like just little symbols in that one area. But I haven't actually done it yet. But I am planning as well, Leah.
Brittany, do you have any tattoos?
I do not, but the only, so there are two tattoos. One of them is fandom related, but I would be getting, the reason I would think about getting it was initially for another reason. So it just, it's a beautiful circumstance where it works out in many different ways. And it's an ampersand because I went to Franklin and Marshall, and the ampersand is like a big symbol that my college uses because we go by FNM and all of our branding is with the ampersand. And I would get it with three of my college friends, but it was also a huge thing in Will and Grace, so it just works out really well for me. And then the only other tattoo that I've ever spoken about with people where I'm like, oh, if I were to ever get it, this is even before the ampersand, I'm like, if I were to ever get any tattoo ever, it would be one thing and it would be really tiny and it would be perfect. And it's a truffula tree from the Lorax, which is fitting because I just went to the Dr. Seuss Museum this weekend.
I don't know what that means, but
have you ever seen anything from the Lorax by Dr. Seuss?
No. Oh, okay. Kind of the little guy that you put, I know sort of that.
So he speaks for the trees and the trees are truffula trees. And they're like they're like thin yellow sticks with like basically a pom-pom on the top, and that's a very Seuss tree, but I love truffula trees.
It's so cute.
I have a few tattoos, and most of them, they're all references to art that I care about as opposed to like someone I know's name or something. Like, so if the ones that aren't fandom directly are music, like a lyric or something like that. And they are all, that's kind of the majority of them. But I have some that are not music related, which are all directly fandom related. I have two Broadway related ones. I have one tattoo that's a French phrase on either of my arm above the elbow, and it's a quote from the original French text of Les Misérables, an exchange between two of the characters, which on one says, I can't speak French, so I can't pronounce it properly. But anyway, it's less related to the musical and more to the book, but it is, I'll post it online. I can't butcher the French. I know what it means, but I can't butcher the French. And then the other one that I have that's Broadway related is I have on my side, and honestly when I don't see them I forget which side it is, so I'm looking right now, so it's that side, left side rib cage, sort of under my bra line, I have like a palm sized like anatomical heart with a green handprint inside it, which is the reference to For Good from Wicked, and I have that with my best friend Megan. We both have that, who Brittany has met. And I have a Harry Potter, I have a crescent moon behind my ear, and Leo has a paw print, which is for Remus and Sirius from Harry Potter. I also have a tattoo on the back of my neck that says always in green and black text, which is the Snape reference, though I am considering slightly changing that one in some way. Like I'm considering like extending that piece to include some other stuff not necessarily Harry Potter related. All the others are music, except I have one on my wrist which is super obscure. It is fandom related. It's so obscure that if I tell you what it is, if I just tell you what it is and then someone tracks down what it's a reference to, I will be both shocked and humiliated. But it's basically just a text word, and it just says finally with a full stop, like so a full sentence, capital F to full stop, finally. And that is a fandom reference. Or it's not a fandom reference. It is a fandom reference. It's a reference to a thing that has happened in my experience with pop culture. And it represents something to me. It is a reminder of a particular experience. But that's fandom related, but it's not like very easy to explain, and it's super embarrassing. So that's all at the moment. So yeah, the two Broadway ones and the two Harry Potter ones, and then a bunch of music ones. So
are we gonna get our Teen Wolf tattoos, Nat?
Yes, and I was gonna say this is relevant because I picked this question today because I'm gonna make Karen get a Teen Wolf tattoo with me at Comic-Con this year. Yay. So
what?
What are you gonna get?
Yeah, what do you mean no?
I didn't know that we were gonna do it that soon.
Yeah, well, when else would we do it?
I don't know. I just got sweaty palms. Why are you springing this on me?
when I suggested it to you, I said when we go to Comic-Con.
I didn't know this you year, were like.
Yeah, I have the stencil. I got them to get the show. Like, yeah. So I want to get with Karen the Teen Wolf. In Teen Wolf, there's the plot line with the Nogitsune. The people in the pack start waking up with this tattoo behind their ear or a mark behind their ear. It's a Japanese character for, and it means self, and it's not a negative thing. It's not like, oh, I'm getting the dark mark. It is basically the branding by the guys who are like technically the good guys to show that person is themselves, basically. And
that's so good. Oh, guys. So,
and I got Will, one of our friends who worked on the show, to get the makeup department's reference for putting that on the characters. And I want to get that with Karen.
Karen, look at how much work she did.
I know. I didn't say no. I just said.
She wrote about all this as well. And I said Comic-Con. Maybe not like, maybe on like the Monday. Like not like we won't go through the con with a new tattoo, you know. Like, so.
I don't have any tattoos. So that would be like, guys, I don't even have my ears pierced. Like I had them pierced for like a little while, and then it hurt so much to put the earrings in that like I decided to just let them close up. So a little nervous, but I do actually really want some tattoos, and they would definitely be fandom tattoos, and probably like, I don't know, Iron Man, Harry Potter, Teen Wolf is obviously a huge one. It would have to be something nerdy. Charmed, maybe.
Well, mentally prepare, but don't get too worked up because it's not a big deal. Like it's less painful than piercing, in my opinion. It's less of a big pain. Yeah. It's more of like an ongoing little pain. I quite enjoy it. Like some people are like, don't handle it well. I sit for tattoos very well. Like I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like meditative for me. And I can go first if you want and show you, like, how, like, not a big deal it is, at least how chill it can be. And, yeah, so, but, yes, when we talked about it, I said Comic-Con, and then I went and got the stencil. And we don't have to, but it would be, you know,
appropriate. I want to. And I want to do it with you rather than, like, getting it on my own.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. You know. I didn't want to be like, oh, yeah, we're just going to, like, get them, like, at some point. No, I want to do it together and stuff. So, yeah, prepare mentally, but don't. Prepare to the point that you get overworked.
Okay.
It will be fine. Everything will be fine. So we're gonna wrap up right now. So just as we do that, we're going to say goodbye to everyone and thank Jack very much for joining us.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I am going to invade and be on again in the future, whether you like it or not.
Yes, I hope so. So you always have something relevant to say. So If anyone wants to leave us a question to answer on another show, please do that on any one of the formats. And, we'll all say bye and leave you with the traditional Not About the Weather high conclusion, which was written this week by Brittany Lovely. So would you like to read that before waving goodbye to us?
Sure. So our haiku this week about the episode we just recorded is, don't gate the fandoms. We cannot talk about this. B-A-B-Y, baby.
I knew you were going to end it on that.
Thank you very much, everyone, and I'll talk to you all soon. Have a good weekend or week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.